No, you got it?
Doug's the only one who knows how to do it. All
right.
Well, thank you guys for coming back again. Apologies for having to go through this twice, but if you want to just walk all of us through the request that's being made, and then we'll ask if we have questions.
Okay.
On that.
I'll start. As you know from the initial request, I mean, we're asking for a substantial increase in funding for the coming year and going forward. And the reason for the request is really based upon what we consider to be the lack of inclusion in prior years of all the costs associated with running the shelter. We've covered this before, but a lot of things that we've covered were included. We have this handout here, just to go through it briefly. These costs were sunk costs in other areas of the county budget, the city budget, and they include bookkeeping, accounting, audit costs, legal expenses, IT web support, credit card insurance, and state licensing fees. In addition, when the initial calculation was done, the ACOs were backed out of all the shelter expenses, even though they provided staffing for the shelter, which when we took it over, we had to have people there to staff it. So when we went back and looked at everything, and there's statistics in here, and we can go through them if you'd like, Michaela can talk to them more about the number and percentages of animal intakes from the city, the county, the other municipalities that we really don't have contracts with but would like to pursue after we get the city and the county straightened out. We came up with a percentage that on a theoretical basis, the county should be paying, the city should be paying, and the other entities should be paying eventually. Obviously, the city and the county are the bulk of that number of intakes as a percentage basis. This little sheet also, as we went through last week, gives some of the additional benefits that we're providing. Spay neuter financial assistance, we do quite a bit of that. You can see the 2019 budget was $23,000 we're funding on our own, which does have a community benefit. And then we also have natural disaster and safe haven relief, which is a minor part that is still available. Some of the questions that were asked previously, there was one about our adoption fees. If you look in here, it shows our adoption. Yes, mm-hmm. Shows our adoption fees were quite a bit lower than either the rest of the state or the national. Mm-hmm. We have subsequently, at the beginning of this year, raised our adoption fees, and as of today, I believe that our numbers have gone from last year through October, we had $18,895 of adoption fees, and this year we have $35,580, and that's both a function of raising our fees and having additional animals adopted out, but it's primarily from raising our fees. Do you have any comment about that?
No, that's right online.
So that was one of the comments that was brought up before. Another comment that was brought up previously, I think Sheriff Williams brought it up. He's talking about reviewing our overall budget that we submitted with the packet.
Yeah.
Which is this budget here, which runs through 2022. And Sheriff Williams appropriately pointed out that when you look at the compensation increases on here, they look to be tripling.
Doug highlighted that.
Doug, email me on one. Right to the meat.
Right to the meat. Why beat around the bush? Huh? Well, let me.
So again, a little bit. And you're doing great. So again, I guess you need a little bit more explanation of the hidden costs and the city's arrangement and how that all worked out and how that's still working out, and so that they're billing you now, and is the ACO still working over there?
No. they don't work there, and they haven't worked there since we took over in 2015. They don't do any shelter operations. They're obviously there a lot, but they're not involved in shelter operations at all.
And we started without you.
Sorry, Dan, I didn't realize you were coming. I would have waited.
No, that's okay. No big deal.
Thank you. All these things, which we put up here, you know, added up to $40,000 to $50,000 a year that weren't included. And then additionally...
That were being backed out by the, in their charge.
Not necessarily backed out, but backed out and weren't charged because they were in different departments in the city in particular. Like the IT costs, there was no IT costs involved in anything that was associated with the shelter. None of the bookkeeping, accounting costs. They were all done by different areas, different departments
in the city.
In the city, they were never allocated back down to the shelter as an expense. They were just eaten at the at a higher level than down in the shelter's budget.
So where would I see that overhead cost in this spreadsheet? I'm having trouble seeing where that is.
In which
the sheet you're looking at, probably administrative is a big one. Probably, I mean, it's going from 20,000 up to 105. So you know, we got a five-fold increase there.
Yeah, you see what I'm saying. I mean, I totally understand the shortfall that you guys are experiencing or have experienced.
Again,
you're now experiencing because the city's charging overhead expenses that they should have been charging.
No, that's not correct.
Okay,
they're not charging.
They're overhead. Not charging these overhead expenses.
They have all their own expenses.
They're ours. That they're taken on.
When you're looking at this budget, this is our entire operation. Okay, this is not just the shelter budget, which we're asking for reimbursement for. You should have a sheet in there that shows 2020.
The shelter operations budget
shelter operations.
Looks like this one.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That is strictly our shelter operation. Shows all the budget items, line items, and comes down also to what we perceive to be our net shortfall in funding for both the city, the county, and the other municipalities. That essentially we are funding out of donations and grants and other sources of fundraisers.
Just so I can think out loud and help put it into perspective for myself, your 2020 shelter total expenditures is about $400,000.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
But your overall program in 2020 is $933,000.
That's correct.
So you've got $533,000 of expenses other than the shelter.
That's right.
But could you help me understand that?
What else do you do?
Yeah, what are those expenses?
Well, that's additional personnel for fundraising and program development, and basically includes costs associated with a capital campaign that we would like to do in the coming years to be able to expand our footprint and our operation.
And so you don't charge those things back?
Those things are not charged
correct.
Back at all.
No. I mean, yeah. This is your overall program.
Right.
This is what,
and this is
this
the
what's direct yep. to us. Okay.
If I can circle back to you, Doug.
So I'm sorry to interrupt you again. So help me understand the issue of the city's overhead that was not being attributed to the shelter.
When we took over in 2015, and we entered into contracts with you, and your contract mirrored the city's. The numbers that the city showed, which we had from 2012, which is the only thing that they could provide us, showed that they were not charging those things I mentioned, bookkeeping, data processing. Those things were not charged in how they came up with the original formula to allocate what they were going to pay us. So all those costs that were sunk into different departments, even vehicle expenses, transportation, those were never allocated into...
So why would vehicle be allocated to you anyhow?
Well, we have a vehicle that supports the shelter
operation.
But
you own it. It's not the city's ACO vehicles.
No, that's right. But there was no kind of vehicle expense whatsoever. If the ACOs were picking up strays... If things were being moved to different places, none of those kinds of expenses were considered when they came up with the original formula that had the dollars in it for what was the shelter operation.
And the reason that the city attributes overhead now is because they
the city has nothing to do with it now.
They're not attributing overhead.
Oh, they're not.
Yeah, I'm not making myself clear. Let me back up a second. All of those things stopped in 2015 when we took over.
I see.
The city based their reimbursement, like you folks did, off those numbers that didn't include all those things. Our operation since then includes our cost to do all those things, and it's not the city's cost,
okay. They're
our costs.
So when the city was running the shelter, they weren't allocating overhead out to
but
the
now that these
animal
guys
shelter.
Are running it.
Right.
We have our own overhead doing those things, and that's the difference. It's not the city charging us overhead now that they didn't charge us. It's our own overhead that we need to supply the services that we're providing.
So basically, you just did the animals. Humane Society just didn't have an accurate picture of what the total cost would have been back in 2017.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
That's basically it.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have as good as accounting systems that we have now. We didn't have the kind of reporting system that we have now that tracks all these things mm-hmm. and gives a more accurate picture.
So this is the city's fault for not allocating overhead
well,
to their
the
departments.
Just
if you want someone to blame.
No,
I don't
want
to throw stones, but the city blames you guys for being cheap.
We're no, that explanation helped a lot. For me, thank you.
Okay,
so I'm still working here.
Yeah,
revenues is 236 here, and it's 204 here, and on this sheet here. Do I have a current sheet?
Yeah, that is the
so most 204, and we got revenues of 236 here, and then so in somewhere you came up with I don't know where the 700 or whatever. So,
yep, I see what you're saying, Doug.
And so again, so total operating expenses here.
And this one is much more accurate than this one for shelter revenue. This shelter revenue was my guess, and this is based more on current data.
Okay.
They're not off much, but it's basically, this is my guess back when the packet needed to be submitted. Okay, so I can finally answer
Wait,
your question.
Please, yeah.
Okay. Compensation costs look a little...
Payroll, yeah.
Payroll looks a little high. That, again, is our overall payroll for the entire organization. It includes everything. When you just go down to the shelter operation, which is on this sheet here, which is $192,500,
yeah.
That compares to the 2016 number that's an actual on here, which is $174,751. So that's increased 10% over 4 years.
Okay.
So it's not much of an increase per year at all. It's been relatively flat.
So how
basically inflationary increases to the shelter operation.
So how do we get to be 600 in 2020?
In payroll?
Yeah.
As an executive director, a development manager, a program manager, those plus benefits, there's in I think an additional position in there also that was in this original projection. We are not going to be at that number for 2020.
So only this that's included in here is billed back to us.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Correct.
It's calculated in this document.
That is correct. Only the items that are directly related to the shelter can be considered billable to the governmental entity.
Because I thought I remembered you. I think I remember you saying like the executive director salary isn't even allocated out.
Not
to
at
the
all.
Governmental entity.
No, it's not. Right. I mean, there's 0% of an ED salary.
And I'm actually struggling to find where there's any labor.
Right here.
It's, yeah,
it's the first page. Expenditure.
It's the very first
staff
one.
Payroll
oh, okay.
Expenses.
Yep.
So you're looking at 192.5
mm-hmm.
for staff mm-hmm. for the shelter operations.
And again, compared back to 2016, when basically all we had was the shelter operation of the one.
It's 170.
Yeah, the 170.
I think it's on the second page.
174,751. That would be comparable from 4 years ago in our 2020 projection. So.
So the growth in this payroll expense is
very small.
Attributable to the other operations.
Correct.
Yeah, the fundraising and them.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So in the revenues versus the county and the city's financial contributions listed on this sheet here, or even on this sheet. Oh, there's the contract for the city,
the contract,
contract for the county.
Mm-hmm. Shelter contracts is a line on this one. But.
So the $39,654,
mm-hmm.
that's what you're budgeting for 2020 from Route County?
That is...
That's what we already paid.
That's what we've been paying.
Yep, that's your current.
Okay. Which contributes to the $196,000 net operating negative.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
So this projection obviously isn't including the increase that you're requesting.
That's correct.
Okay.
Which one does?
Just shelter contracts. I mean, because the number
right.
doesn't go up
okay.
from 19
right.
to 20. Yeah, mm-hmm. it goes down, in fact. And so just to remind myself, you took your total operating budget and you divided that out based on these percentages. Is that right? The percent of total...
Yes, the intakes.
Mm-hmm. Percent of total shelter intakes?
That's mm-hmm. right.
Okay. And then that's how you came up with what our contribution should be,
mm-hmm.
theoretically.
Correct. Theoretically.
Yeah,
yes.
And then you said that you backed out adoption fees
yes.
from Ralph County?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So...
And then I actually backed down the request in general...
Just
arbitrarily. Not to be shocking. That's enough shock that, you know, I ask for what I ask for.
So even factoring in the additional income that you would be getting from Brown County, presuming we approve your budget request,
mm-hmm.
you're still going to have a negative number.
That's correct.
Net, so what will that new, what's that new negative operating number?
Well, that'll be... With the new city contract and with if we get this increase, we'll be down to a negative about $25,000, $26,000 on my projection.
And you make that up via fundraising?
Fundraisers,
yeah.
Grants, donations.
Well, I'm relieved to hear that you're getting close to zero.
We are too.
So I guess I'm confused to how you're going to get 25, because we got 401,300 total expenditures. You take that off, so we're basically $200,000 short on revenues. And if you add back in our additional 40, that still leaves you 160 that you're short.
I'm sorry, I thought you were talking about Route County's. You're correct.
I
thought you were talking about Route County's contribution, not the entire budget. Yes, you're
so
correct.
So you'll just be 25 short for Route County.
For Route County.
Oh.
Okay.
So I'm less relieved.
You're still going to be short then in for the 25
sure.
is just the short in regards to Route County.
The county itself.
We'll be short 140 or so in total.
Okay. Now that I can understand
makes
that.
Sense.
Yes.
Okay, I thought you were. I'm sorry about that. I misunderstood the question.
You're probably asking two different things, Pepper and Anya, so here. So.
That's all right.
I'm
so, what are. after this year, what are you thinking? I mean, are you going to be anticipating asking for increases from us and from the city every year? I mean, are you looking to ratchet it up? Are you thinking you'll continue making up the shortfall with other sources of funding? What's your thought? Well,
I think the realistic answer is that it's a combination of both.
Okay.
I mean, we would like to get an agreement with Hayden. We would like to get an agreement with Oak Creek. It wouldn't be a great amount of money, but it would help, and it would more formalize we are subsidizing them now completely.
Right.
So we'd like to have something with them. The way we left it with the city is that we would come back and revisit this in a year, see how we performed against what we projected, and then at least with the city, and I don't know how you want to mirror them, I mean, we were going to sit down, you know, in the fourth quarter of next year and kind of reevaluate everything. There are some terms in that contract that are new, and we don't know how they're actually going to work out, but we'd like to revisit those, not necessarily monetary terms, but other terms in the contract. And, you know, I guess, to put it simply, our goal is to provide a service to the governmental entities that's cost-effective, that everybody can question and agree about our expenses, and to try to get reimbursed in full for what we're providing to the governmental entities. That would be our goal. So I think the answer is yes in the long term, and I think in the short term it's probably a combination of we'll increase, you know, not increase, but we'll continue to fund shortfalls, you know, depending on what the budget constraints are of the governmental entities. I mean, we know there's not unlimited money, so we're not we're not asking for unlimited money. We're asking to get closer to what everyone would perceive as a fair and good value for your expense, for the services we're providing.
So part of the thing I'm struggling with, you know, with the Rout County dogs or cats, I mean, so just because they're, and how we figure out where they originate and why, that becomes my problem.
Yeah, so every single animal that comes in. Every animal that comes in, we have an intake sheet for them, and we have the person or Rout County Sheriff's Office. I think most of our numbers is Rout County Sheriff's Officers are bringing these animals in. So they have
exactly. So they're not give up and adopt, and they're not.
No, they're usually strays.
Person that's.
There is that.
There is, yeah, sure.
This chart has those numbers.
Yeah, as far as intakes go.
I know there's a lot of information in here. That's,
yeah, I got it, yeah.
So intake statistics for the past 3 years. Yeah, most of it's sheriff's officers, and they are abandoned animals, or they're just strays, and their owners kind of pick them back up. That's for the majority of it is returned owners.
What do you charge someone that
when
their dog is loose and they,
sure.
My dog gets away.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure, picks it up.
Yeah.
I come down to pick up my dog. Mm-hmm. What would I have to pay?
It's $25 a day for boarding fees. The animal has to be up to date on rabies vaccines as well, so a lot of times they're not up to date on vaccines. That's just Colorado law. We can't get around that.
So you're not, there's no punitive part of the fine, or it's a fee.
It's a fee?
That just covers the actual cost
of care while they're
of care.
Yeah. Yep. Which is about $25 a day. And
then, you don't believe that you have the latitude to raise those fees?
We, as far as I know, $25 a day is about as high as you can get.
Well,
the front range is
leverage. I mean, we would have to have an ordinance.
Well,
right? Because the city charges for, like, at-large dogs.
They do. They do.
Which is different.
They do.
Yep,
you
and that's different.
Charge
we can't charge
we
that.
Charge.
So,
yeah.
We can't issue citations or anything like that.
But what I'm hearing here is that you guys are operating this facility
mm-hmm.
at a loss.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that loss
yeah.
is because of the services that you're having to provide.
Sure.
If you're only charging $25
yeah.
a day
yeah.
for the stray dog, are you actually collecting your cost?
For the most part, we are. Not everybody's able to afford that. If they're not able to afford it, we're eating it. $25 a day is extremely high for the state of Colorado.
Really?
Most front range shelters will charge between $7 and $15 a day for boarding. So I don't think we quite feel comfortable raising. We've talked about it. We could charge $40 a day, but $25 a day is hard for a lot of people.
I could guarantee you that Joel out there in Yap is charging more than $25 a day.
Joel charges 33.
Is that what he charges?
Yep. Yeah. And most of the boarding facilities in the area do.
So why wouldn't the Humane Society stay competitive with the private sector?
We probably got a double-edged sword there. If you charge too much, they're not going to
pick up the animal, which we deal with
enough. Thank you. And yeah. Going a new dollar.
Yeah. $25 a day is really hard.
That's exactly
right. And if we compare ourselves to other shelters that are contracted with municipalities, they're not charging nearly enough. I mean, either. 25 is quite a bit.
And then I have just one other quick question. Under your 2020 expenses, you have a line item, 5305, for in-house veterinary labor, mm-hmm. $33,000.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I take that's truly in addition to the $192,000 of payroll expenses.
Well, you can look at it that way, and it wouldn't be incorrect, but we're going to have to provide veterinary services one way or another. The way we used to primarily provide it was contracting out with the vets here in town. We can provide this service at a substantial discount to the veterinary rates in town, even though all the vets give us a discount. Our in-house rates are much lower and much more cost-effective for everyone than going out and contracting with them.
So you have an employee that's a veterinarian?
No.
We have a contractor.
Contractor.
Okay, that's a misnomer calling it in-house veterinary labor. You could just call that line item.
It's not an outhouse.
It's contract veterinary labor, right?
Yes, contract veterinary labor.
Okay.
That's correct, yes.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
That's exactly what she is.
So back to my question that I'd had here. So we're just getting charged for the seized custody the Rock County Sheriff's Office brings in, the 80, so we're not getting charged for the 22. Is that correct? For the Robb County?
For total intakes, you're looking at RCSO, Robb County Sheriff's Office, versus total intakes?
Yeah.
No, you'd be charged.
It's for all the
above. It's for all.
Yeah.
These calculations.
So this is, again, how you allocate what wage should be paid.
Yep.
Yes,
uh-huh.
It is.
It's the 35.2%.
You are getting money out of that, which is then going mm-hmm. into this other line item for people that are owner drop-off or owners, well, it's
when we allocate the revenue back to you.
Oh, okay.
On the same percentage.
At the 32, at the 30, 30.
Like the adoption.
Correct. 30%. Yeah.
We allocate that revenue back to you to make it fair, to make it apples to apples.
Mm-hmm. So you just take the total of that revenue and allocate it back, right? You're not saying, oh, this was adopted from Rout County or from Steamboat or whatever.
No, we're not doing that. That's a more
that would
fine
be crazy.
Cut than
yeah.
we can get down.
I understand. Yeah, that would take some time.
That makes sense.
So then the payroll expenses, so this number is wrong, and this is the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Payroll expenses that are being charged to the operations is the $192,500.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Is it correct?
Mm-hmm.
And that was what was the 174? Is that what you said?
That was
174,571 in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's five FTE approximately?
Yes.
Because you have the shelter animal, three staff, sorry, shelter manager, three staff. And then two part-time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
That's correct. 550.
I don't have any other questions right now. I guess a couple of comments.
I don't have any questions.
Do you So, we don't want to beat you up here, and I appreciate you guys doing what you do. Our alternative is, you as you would know, our alternative, that's too expensive. We're just going to do more of us.
Well, you can ask Tim what the other alternative is.
Yeah, we have Bobby George out.
No. Other than shoot, shovel, and shut up. So, but anyhow, Mike, I still believe that you guys are providing a good service for him, and I'm not interested in being a shelter operator. And again, so I appreciate it. And again, I knew when we were in the $40,000 seemed too good to be true back in the day, and so you know it was and is, and I'm fine with the increase. And again, I guess I just meet face to face. It's good that you guys are putting a good faith effort into trying to keep it down as much as you can too. So we're not, as Commissioner Melton said, that we're not facing another tripling in the next year as well.
That is no one's intent.
Yeah. And again, I'm sure you're not all going to the Bahamas
I'm
here.
I guarantee you that.
The other thing,
I can speak to that.
When we were, Doug Shearer was here and he asked about the transfers in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I just thought it was interesting that they said that actually when they take animals from other places, it subsidizes the shelter. Like if they can get puppies from Oklahoma or whatever and then adopt them out, that helps to subsidize operations.
It does quite a bit, I think. Most animals that come in from Route County are behavior cases or medical cases.
Route County citizens.
Yeah. Yep,
no, I'm sure they're
not literally.
They're not.
Just like my dog sometimes.
So most
you're
animals.
You're not a repeat offender, are you?
No, I'm not.
He keeps that dog in line.
Good. Most of our transfers, though, do subsidize our adoptions quite a bit.
I would imagine that our clientele here in Steamboat and Route County would be very accepting of adopting
pets.
So when other places probably have the doggy mills and puppy mills and the rest, and they get caught and sucked up into the system. I imagine you guys do a great job getting them out just because of our clientele.
Yep.
Well, and you said that's Colorado in general, right?
It's pretty in line with the entire state.
So you typically are not destroying animals?
No. Our live release rate is above 95%.
Your what?
Our live release rate. So every animal who comes into our shelter, we release alive 95%, if that makes sense.
So you do use the crematorium from time to time?
We do. So the crematorium is its own service as well. We have our own, that's kind of a separate entity. But most of our, we're not euthanizing. We might euthanize 3 or 4 dogs a year, if that.
We obviously have court order.
Court order euthanasias.
We have to do.
Yep.
And then customer pay, I assume. You don't have people bringing their dog in to die or something?
We do. That's a service that we offer.
Yeah, exactly.
And we have all the vets, every animal that dies at a veterinary clinic comes to us.
Cremation.
Yep.
But those aren't included in our statistics.
No, that's separate.
The dogs that we have control over one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I echo Commissioner Monger's comments. Yeah, we've been getting undercharged. We get that. It's painful to take the upcharge, especially this late in the budget season.
Sure.
But I agree. I think we probably have an obligation to help you guys cover this shortfall.
Thank you.
Yeah. We appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yep. I concur.
So I guess the question is for us, is if the fall, is that going to be too late before we need probably 6 months to see how this is going? Mm-hmm. But we'll be
when you want to do statistics and we'll get them for you.
We can pull them together.
If you want to do it in June or July, we can do
that. I think we probably don't want to wait until the end of October.
Come June 30th, you'll be 6 months into the year.
We can do that.
Maybe 30 days after that, by the end of July.
We can definitely do that.
Give a pretty good look back on the first half of the year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then what's the status of it? So we had indicated to the sheriff that, this is a contract renegotiation. If there are services or anything in there that needed to be changed, they would really be the ones who would indicate that. So do we know where we're at
with that? They pay for a fee service, too. I mean, it depends on what we're talking about, though. We're talking about the crematorium. We actually, for burning records and things, are you talking about the...
I'm talking about the contract that the county has with the Humane Society.
The details of the service that's being provided by the Humane Society.
Right.
Sheriff has that. After today, I need to I'll find out whether they had time to review that or not, whether Don Smith had time to look at that and get that back in. Because we're going to have to amend the contract anyway with these new amounts. And then we'll look at the services that are provided and any changes that they request. We asked them to get with the county attorney's office to do that as well, find out whether they have one.
And the city did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. I hope to have the city's contract signed this week, and we'll obviously provide that to you. We're going to mirror that contract or however your attorney.
Yeah.
The county attorney wants to do it, we'll do it.
we'll deal with that. But we'll get a contract to you as soon as possible to, for your approval.
Great. But as far as the budget amount is concerned, I think we'll probably...
Good to go.
Sound good, Dan?
He knows.
I'm just concerned about, you know, you got, you know, you're only making, like, covering, like, 50% of your costs. I mean, that's, are you going to be a going concern here?
As a, yes, we are going to be a going concern.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah, we're just paying for the animal shelter part, so.
We have significant grant writing capability. We just, this week, will complete our first audit and have an opinion issued, which will allow us access to a whole new level of grantors and foundations, which we plan to utilize to supplement that.
And we'll revisit in June and see
Sounds how great.
Things are going.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Thank you
very much.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you, guys.
Keith, thank you for coming in again.
Oh, my pleasure.
Michaela, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Thanks for coming.
Sure, I know.
Oh, you do?
I heard you mention it.
Okay, good. What was it?
Yeah. A couple things to do outside. Thank you again.
Thank you. So come on up, Kathy.
About changing the agenda, but I never saw a new agenda. Do we know what happened? You were involved in that conversation. Maybe it wasn't Friday, whatever day it was.
You know, we were
going to give Kathy a little extra time so that she could talk about benefits as well as...
She's questioning whether or not she needs...
Yeah, I put extra in my presentation only because I didn't know if we would have... We would need as much time since I had a whole hour. But you guys may have a lot of questions.
I guess, is Dan expecting to come in at 3 or 3:30?
Dread?
Yes.
3.
Still at 3? Okay. Because we had talked about a change to that. But you think you'll be all right.
We'll see.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good.
Okay. So the topic of the classification study was what was on the agenda. So what I'm providing to you is the current status and the schedule that's currently in place. And right now, I have received probably, I think, about 35, 40 job descriptions or job classifications that they have sent over to me to review. And I've taken a look at probably half of those CPSHR.
Okay.
So they're sending them to me in groups. And they don't seem to, it's not like there's a rhyme or reason. I mean, they're kind of just a variety of different job descriptions. And I've looked at them, and overall, I think the content looks really good. I really like the professionalism of the language, and I think it covers...
So I'm sorry, I don't understand. Those are... I apologize for interrupting. Those are draft job descriptions.
Correct, and they call them classifications.
Okay, but we would use them
correct.
As part of our job description.
That's correct.
Okay.
My biggest concerns...
Part of... Is that sounds like we're going to be using them as job descriptions.
Okay. Well, we don't have to necessarily get into the details. I want to make sure
we're understanding the right way, too. So.
Well, I guess, so to that point, not to take us off task, mm-hmm. but I guess what I was thinking is, like, if we have an administrative assistant for, there's going to be some things that are consistent, but there might be some details that are specific to what department they're working in. So that's why I say part of.
Correct. So, for example, I looked at one for the clerk, and there's their motor vehicle clerks, there's the elections, there's recorder, and basically what they showed on this one particular one is, if you're working in MVD, here are additional responsibilities that you would have. If you're working for the clerk and recorder, these are additional responsibilities that you have. I don't know, in our initial conversations, they didn't indicate to me that that's what they were going to do. They indicated that for some, they were going to do their best to keep them consistent so that they were somewhat broad-based, and the departments themselves would have to come up with those, you know, those specifics of what that person is doing on a regular basis when it was part of a group. The positions that are not part of a group, if it's a, you know, the airport director or manager, those are comprehensive, and they're not going to be broad based like you would expect some of the admin positions to be. And the one of the admin positions, I think we've talked about this, that are very specific, they made a determination that they fall into a, probably a completely different job title in group. Or not even a group, they could just be a one-off. I don't have the updated crosswalk table. I will tell you, in just reviewing the jobs, some of the job titles were such where I wasn't even sure I had figured out if it was, which position it was based on, because they had accounting.
Which position
accounting
was in the department?
Well, they had accounting, they have accountant, and then they have, you know, accounting manager, and they changed the titles around. And so in looking at the job descriptions, it was a little bit difficult for me to discern what was what, and they're calling them completely different things. So I have to go back to them, and I've already talked about getting the crosswalk table, but also making a determination of, you know, does it have the right education and credentials in there? Because it seemed like they were using semesters, too. And so instead of using, you know, they were a graduate or years of experience and things like that, it was like, okay, 60 semesters of A, B, and C. And which, to me, it's just so specific, I don't necessarily think we want to go down that hole. So I have a call scheduled with them tomorrow afternoon to talk about some of this, but overall, I think they look really good. I think they're very long. My objective was to, you know, have two pages front and back, and that's it. Some of these are four pages long based on putting in what the knowledge that's necessary and the skills and abilities, and they actually do one line for each one of those things. And so I need to talk to them about that, because I'd like that to be revamped. And I can give you, I brought an example. So this is Kendra's. This is a draft of Kendra's position. You can just see how they have it laid out in a little bit of what I'm talking about.
So are you going to ask them to shorten these up, or
yeah,
is that what you're thinking?
Yes. I said something to them about it in an email over the weekend, that they seem really long. And so we're just going to, a lot of times when I talk to them, I let them share what they think is critical and make a judgment call as to whether we want to flex or not.
What was the classification of this job?
So this job was an admin 6.
Okay. And it will now be an executive administrative assistant.
That's the title that they are recommending right now.
There'll be a, and that presumably will have fall into a higher pay scale.
I'm not going to presume anything at this point. It's in the pay scale that it's in. I mean, I'm not necessarily sure it would fall into a new pay scale.
None of this actually relates to pay scale.
Not at this point in time, no. This just relates to putting them into buckets where we can and getting alignment. Alignment to the market, I should say.
So these job duties were developed by CPS HR in conjunction with you?
The PDQs. I did not. Oh, all okay. I did for them was I sent them the original job descriptions. Okay. They got the PDQs, and from that content, this is the draft that they created.
Okay. Remind me what a PDQ is.
Position description questionnaire.
Pretty deep.
It was.
Well, I don't know if I'd go there.
It was what everyone had to fill out to describe what they do, what their job duties are.
Yeah, I wouldn't describe it as quick.
So it was each individual that filled out the PDQ?
Each person filled out the PDQ, and then their supervisor also reviewed the PDQ, and if that supervisor had a supervisor, they reviewed the PDQ. And they weren't able to edit anything that the employee put together. They could enter their own comments in a section that was different from the employee because they didn't want department heads making modifications to what the employee felt the work was that they were carrying out.
So how many more executive administrative assistants are there going to be out there?
I don't know.
On the original crosswalk, there was zero.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's probably, I think that's our only six out of administrative assistants. So I don't anticipate more, but again, I looked at the crosswalk and it didn't seem that there were significant changes, and I just, rather than go through it detail by detail, I thought I'd just wait for the next one.
Hopefully this was supposed to simplify life, right?
Well, it will simplify life because the job descriptions will look the same. They'll be professional.
For admin 1, 2, 3, or 4, or mechanic, or
yes, they will
operator.
Be. You know, I think there are a number of people that will fall into the accounting area. So you'll have, instead of having a treasurer, you know, accountant, they'll all get grouped together. And the way that they're writing these is that we should be able to have a better match to the external market. And I think the way that they write them, so they do have a piece in there that talks about how the position differentiates itself from another position that's probably similar, which could also help with employees understanding why they're not a lead versus, you know, an individual contributor versus a supervisor.
So, intuitively, I understand why you would want a two-page document rather than a four-page document. I mean, help me understand why this isn't a good thing to have this level of detail.
Well, and that's where I say I need to talk to them about it to find out, do we really need all the content, and is it going to be critical to our success in utilizing these? So initially my response was, whoa, these are longer than what I had anticipated wanting for an end result.
Yeah, I'm looking at knowledge of advanced methods of ensuring accurate data entry.
What is that? And how
would I really like the alphabetical, numerical, and chronological filing methods. It does seem like a lot of detail.
Right.
I agree with you.
Right. And, you know, it could be that if I would tell you, if I was doing this, I would probably start out with maybe including some of that minutia and then narrowing it down, but maybe I would use some of that to draw some of my own conclusions as to where to insert these or where to compare them, but eventually you would think that that would go away.
Yeah, I really like the one ability to provide and obtain information to and from others. That's it.
Getting in the weeds, Tim.
Yeah.
So, any questions on that example?
Actually, I've kind of I mean, I feel like when you said it should be two pages, I was like, yeah, it should be two pages. But then looking at it, I don't know, it doesn't really bother me.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me that it's four either. No.
Because I'm thinking, like, you apply for a job, you apply for it once, and you need to read it in depth.
Yeah, you need to know what you're going to be expected to do, and then add to the other jobs as required.
Right. Other
duties. Well, I'm glad that you're okay with it.
Glad to see we're making some progress. I think that's good.
Yeah. No, we're definitely making progress. So,
can I circle back to one thing that you said? You said that some of the job titles or the class titles, you didn't really know what they were just by looking at them. Are you going to be asking that they use titles that are more, I guess, like, if we don't need to change them, we don't change them? Do you know what I mean? Like, if we already have a title that works, can we just keep it? Are they going to want us to?
I think it's a conversation that we'll need to have, and I also think that it comes down to, I think that'll also fall into play when it comes to the department heads reviewing the documents. And I know when we've talked about this, Dan has already kind of chimed in about a position where the title changed and he wasn't that keen on the new title. Mm-hmm. And the titles have changed multiple times already. And that was one of the things that I commented to them about, and I need to better understand, are they doing that because it's a good match to external markets, so it's a quick view, or, which doesn't really make sense because you look at the description always anyways just to make sure it's a match. Mm-hmm. But I need to have that conversation with them. I think that some of it, they feel like, I think the accountant one was probably like a budget and finance analyst or something like that, which, you know,
you have to know who does that.
Yeah, and they may, you know, some of the account managers may really do more of that than what an account manager does. But I haven't delved into it very deeply at this point.
I guess the real question would be, what are their recommended titles going to be based on? And is it comparisons to other entities? Is it sort of just a guess, you know, of whatever they like the best?
Well, theoretically, outcome of this is, if we choose to do a salary survey, this should make the salary survey considerably easier to be done.
That's the goal in the first place, right?
Right.
Also, we are doing a salary survey, so it's nice. I'm pretty sure we already approved it.
Yes, well, you did. You did approve it already. So,
we can change the budget, too. We haven't finished yet.
What did you say?
They have until December.
They have what?
Until December.
Oh, to change? Oh, okay. There you go.
So be nice. Yeah. I'm just joking. You don't have to be nice.
I do my best. We can't do a salary survey till this gets done.
Right.
This gets done and implemented and thrown out to the masses.
Correct.
And for slaughter, I'm just not positive and optimistic that there's going to be widespread acceptance to anything that's new and changed in the rest too. So,
well, I think that's very wise. I think that's going to be the case. This is the current schedule, and just so that you know, I did put that we are in the process of updating the amended contract. I've received a first draft. I reviewed it. I received a second draft, and I have questions about some of the content that's in there as far as the descriptors. So I'm going to be talking to them tomorrow, but the bottom line is that as far as the cost goes, I think I put it was going to be an additional maybe $4,000 in the budget, and that really comes down to travel. The difference between what we had budgeted for phase two and what we used, and the additional monies that were required for the implementation process, there's a difference of like $1,000 if you don't include travel. But I think it's worth including some travel for them to come out here for, certainly for the discussions with employees and presenting to you all and the department heads, if you all are interested.
What do you think the necessity of the appeals process is?
So the necessity of the appeals process is for us, really. I mean, you're not going to have buy-in if you just shut it down. And I think that the appeals process is going to
allow our people to have a voice. It will allow CPSHR to articulate why the changes are the way that they are, and I think that you're going to have a better chance of success under those circumstances. Because if they think they're just being shut down and they don't have a voice, then that I don't think that's going to go as well. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I mean, that, I guess that's kind of what I was thinking. I was concerned that it was maybe adding a lot of unnecessary work, but I understand that it's important to build buy-in.
I mean, my guess is it will add work, and part of the reason why I'm reviewing the job descriptions to begin with, and I'm doing it from a general perspective, is because they don't want the department heads to have a knee-jerk reaction or a negative reaction before they've had a chance to put together the report and why the changes are the way that...
Crosswalk report.
It's going to be more than that. It's going to be the crosswalk report just basically says we think this person should be titled, or this job should be titled this, and it should go into this group. The report will actually... My understanding is that it will provide a lot more detail as to why these decisions were made. They will be reaching out one-on-one to individuals whose positions are changing to have a conversation with them, to explain that to them. There's a lot more hands-on that will be related to that versus just showing people a report and saying, you know, this is the result and you need to stick with
it.
Get a wild guess at the percentage of employees that will experience a change in job title?
I think it's going to depend on us, because from what I could tell in the crosswalk table, there's significant job title changes. And so I think we'll have to look at that, I think, as a senior team and say, does this give, you know, how does this feel emotionally? Is it going to cause more of an emotional stir, even though nothing else changes within their position? And is it worth going down that path is really how I look at it, because we know that individuals don't like change. So that's my knee-jerk reaction on, do I want to change every title? No. Do I want everyone thinking, now that I'm this, I deserve this? Not so much.
It looks like, I mean, I still have the draft version. I mean, it's most people, I would say.
Yeah.
Just at a quick glance.
They've changed a lot of the titles. I think that the positions, though, I think that when it comes to somebody who needs to get actually reclassified or moved up or moved down, I still think it's around 10 or under that. I don't think that has changed.
Just the title, just what their job is.
Yeah, right. So this is the schedule that we currently have in place. And again, I'm reviewing the job descriptions right now. And basically, I send them back. They're sending me some, I'm sending them back, we're having the conversation, but the expectation is that we'll, by the November 20th, we should be through most of that and feel like we've completed the draft so that they're in good shape to actually, you know, be reviewed. And then, They're going to confirm where they're going to, you know, how they're going to group people November 18th through December 2nd. They're going to go through a process of, do we have people allocated in the right groups, and then put together summaries of those groups. And then they're going to make sure that there's equity and all of that. So that's what is supposed to be done by December 2nd. And then they're going to put together a draft classification report that includes how they went about, you know, getting to where they, what they submitted to us and their recommended changes. So they're closed. I can't remember how many days. I don't know if you know that, Dan, but they're closed for a week or so in December. So that eats a little bit away, a little bit of our time. But right now they have it slated from December 2nd to January 6th. They'll have that completed. Questions on any of that?
We'll surely be part of it.
So in January, that's when they would like to, that's when they're saying the new year's when we'll start the implementation and we'll start talking to department heads and presenting that information. So that's the one-day on-site meeting to present the study to senior management, be able to hear their comments, have some discussions about the method to the madness, so to speak. And obviously these dates are going to be predicated on whether or not we can fit them in during those times, who's available, but this is basically the flow that they have based on their availability and the completion of the work. January 10th through the 14th, they're thinking that they'll be able to look at the appeals and prepare information to notify each individual of what the recommendation is and why that recommendation for that position. So, I mean, I think it's a good thing that they're going to have one-on-one conversations with employees so that they also have a voice and get a better understanding of it. And I think I've mentioned this before, that I heard feedback from them when there was an employee who thought that they were a supervisor, and CPSHR went through this process of saying, no, you're not really a supervisor. And you'll see that in some of the job descriptions where they're there to advise a person to help them carry out the work, but that does not give them a supervisory title, so to speak. So I think having those one-on-one conversations with CPSHR will allow an employee to better understand maybe why, you know, there's a difference in their position.
Ultimately, CPSHR will be the decision maker on the appeals.
Well, I think we're going to work.
I
think that we're going to work with them. We are the client, so whatever we decide is what we decide. But I would default. We're paying them to kind of come up with this program. And so I would, again, I always go to them and say, help me to understand why you want to do this.
So will they provide some kind of a form for employees to fill out to make an appeal, or will the employee just say, hey, I don't like my job description, come talk to me?
They're going to reach out to everyone whose position is different. I think that's part of the I wouldn't call them high risk, but for those individuals where we're more than likely to get resistance or they're going to want an understanding. I think for those individuals in particular, they'll be reaching out to them. For the rest of the individuals where maybe it's a title change, I think that's just a understanding and starting at the higher level of the department head and our senior teams and HR to have employees better understand that. I assume if there's a problem somewhere, they would be happy to support us, but it really comes down to those individuals where the position is being reclassified or a recommended change.
So an individual gets reclassified, they make an appeal, CPSHR takes a look at the appeal, they provide a response.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say the response is, hey, we got it right. You really do need to be reclassified. Then what for the employee if they're still unhappy?
Well, I think they're going to come to me and they're going to say, this is right. You're going to have to make a judgment call because you're going to start going down that path of having positions not...
They're going to go to the department head first and then lobby the department head to come lobby her. Correct?
My goal is not to cave to an employee because we've gone through a pretty thorough process. So unless someone can convince me otherwise, I'm going to stick with what the recommendations are. Unless, you know, we have had some positions that have been updated and perhaps they've been updated to the point where, you know, there does need to be a change. But more than likely, it's more of an emotional situation for employees, and I think we need to help them work through that piece of it.
Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to avoid is having it come to us. Be ideal if that...
I don't want it to go to you either.
Right.
So,
I mean, the way we avoid that is we don't let people complain to us. I mean, we tell them that we're taking recommendations. Yeah, we're taking recommendations from and input from Kathy and from
show support to Kathy in the process.
Exactly. That's exactly.
I think between this team here, if it escalates to that level, we will definitely be able to figure it out. But you know, I'm kind of like, I'm all about fairness to the point of, I'm sorry, too bad, so sad, but this is, you know, we need to.
I guess the one, I mean, my advice would be, and ever you can reject it, would be that there be some requirement that the appealing employee put into writing what they're, why they're taking exception to the change, rather than just being able to pick the telephone up and say, hey, I don't like my new title, you know, I want you to fix it. Seems like they should be at least required to come up with some kind of rational reasoning why they believe that CBS HR got it wrong.
So an inoperable thing that's going to happen even worse than that is they're not going to say anything through getting these things. And then we go through and do the salary survey.
And then they'll,
and then they'll come back and say, well, guess what?
You know, oh, no, they'll do both.
Yeah, they'll definitely do both.
It would be nice to say, well, we never saw your report during the classification study, so.
I think that CPSHR has enough experience to provide us guidance on this. I also think that at some point, and call me cold-hearted, but at some point, if the department has reviewed it and there's been enough time for people to communicate, at some point you just have to say, you know, yeah,
we're moving on.
Right.
Especially if it's really just a name change. I mean, I understand that you're saying that most likely it's going to be people who something is really changing about the classification of their position, but there will be people who just don't like their title because they liked their last title and they have some attachment to it for whatever reason.
The biggest thing, so I will say that I've already talked to a department head who, you know, let's say there's admin fives and this department head has an admin five. And I said, well, your people are probably, you know, this person's going to stay in that same bucket with, you know, Tom,
the other
Susie, and
yeah.
Right. And he went, oh, they're not the same. So that's even, that's before we've even come forward. But they're just looking at people and saying, well, you know,
my person.
Tom is an equivalent to, you know, my person. And so I don't think they should be in the same category. So that's where the CPSHR is really going to be able to help us, because it's, I have more concerns about the department heads feeling like their people are doing more than whoever they're getting compared to.
I would agree totally. Yeah,
I think absolutely. That's probably likely.
Yep.
And that's where you need us to just back
that's
you
normal.
Up.
And,
yeah, right? I mean, yeah. Because, Tim, we're not going to keep people from deciding they want to just march in here and talk to one of us. I mean, the way we keep them from having influence over that is we don't let them. I mean, that's the equitable.
Unless you're at the grocery store and then, you know.
All bets are off.
That's right.
Well, I only go to the grocery store in disguise.
Good night. So
baseball hat, sunglasses.
Shot them off. Got it.
I try to go in disguise, but then I have my kid with me and everyone recognizes him. Go ahead, Kathy.
That's okay. I'm good. So right now we're looking at it to be completed by the end of February, and I don't anticipate, I'm going to default to CPSHR to talk about what to do about the salary situation, because I know we are going to be doing a salary survey, but it may be that if some people are really classified at the wrong thing, we may need to go out and look at the market and say, okay, well, what should this person be paid, or should it be, should they stay at their existing pay until we've completed the salary survey? So I'm going to wait to find out what it all looks like and if it's a...
Yeah, I wouldn't lead out any bait that we're going
no.
to be one off of them.
Yeah.
No.
I'm looking at a couple of them because, you know, it's been that way for... They're still doing the same job they got hired for, really, in reality.
Yeah.
Right. So, so I haven't gotten to that point yet, and the fact that we're doing a salary survey and we're going to be carrying out this implementation with CPSHR, I haven't gone down that path because I don't know what it looks like at this point based on the crosswalk. But these are this is the outline for them to basically help us keep this structure in place. And it has to do with they're going to be researching what we have in place, identifying what best practices that we could perhaps utilize to keep job descriptions intact. This is also something where you all will be very helpful in backing us up, because historically the department heads have made the changes to the job descriptions, and Tom and I just, we review them for language. And part of the problem that's happened with our job descriptions is that everybody is, some people are great writers, some people aren't great writers, some people include minutia, some people don't. And that's where we came up with this inconsistency of what our jobs look like. And if we can take on those changes in human resources, I think we'll have better control of that. Ultimately, like other counties, I would like us to have all of our job descriptions posted on our website for individuals to have access to.
Well, you still have a book in here.
Well, I
think it's still here.
You still do.
It's over here.
No,
doesn't really matter.
But people request that information, and my understanding is with the transparency, there's no reason why we couldn't have that accessible.
Absolutely.
For people to review those specifics. So... But I'm not sure, I don't know how comfortable people are going to, or department heads are going to be saying, well, I want to make this change, and HR isn't going to make the change, or they want to do it this way. And so that's a bridge we're going to have to cross in the future. But hopefully with this, the best practices that CPSHR is going to help us with, I think that we'll be in a better place. And part of that, part of the recommendation on this was because most of the job descriptions came from the department heads, and they said, you know, if you just keep doing this and it's not internally taken care of in human resources, you know, within, you know, 6 months, a year, you're going to be back to having inconsistencies.
So that was the next question I was going to ask. So how does this change that process going forward? I mean, obviously, in most cases, someone will choose from already existing jobs, but in the event that someone needs to create a new position, how will they go about writing a description?
Well, I think that what will happen is we'll be more hands-on in the process. We can always, it's always helpful to get a draft, particularly when it's a specialized piece. You know, the public health thing, getting that content is very helpful in understanding what may be comparable salary. So I think if they can do the homework, you know, as they, you know, if they're comfortable with that, provide us that information, we'll work from that. But the goal is to replicate the same kind of formatting and content that we have in our existing job descriptions so that we're consistent.
Makes sense.
We'll be right behind you.
Thank you.
Until your nose bleeds.
Yeah.
Which means somebody's hit you. So.
Yeah, right.
Then Tim's going to jump in front.
That's right. I'll take one for the team.
Take one for the team. Your shoulder's good. Now you can just get in there. So what questions? I don't have a schedule for this yet, but that's February. That's the end of February. So what questions do you have for me?
So you're saying this part is after February 24th?
That's correct.
Oh, okay. Got it.
That's correct. This is really HR centralized, with the exception of having department heads understand that this is going to be, that in moving forward, I'm going to say senior management is interested in having this internally managed within human resources so that we can maintain all the work that was just carried out related to the descriptions.
So then, I know you just said you don't have a timeline, but do you have an estimate of kind of how long that stage will take based on your discussion with them?
I had a schedule of how many weeks they put into it, and my guess is it's going to take a month or a month and a half is what I would think. Though, you know, when they talk about doing research, I don't know what that means as far as them going through our records. I do have a schedule somewhere that I could give to you, but.
So what are we talking about now?
I'm confused.
Just this page. The implementation comes after they finish the study, which I didn't realize. So
well,
this next page is after February 24th.
I mean, after the appeal process, the new job classifications
would
be implemented. they're done.
Yeah.
The implementation's over with.
Well, once it's done, it's a matter of now what's the next step that we're going to do, and how are we going to maintain this, you know, this resource that we've just completed.
So when you so everyone will have their new classifications and like the employee facing side of this will be done at the end of February?
That's correct.
Okay, so this is more internal in your department.
This is internal.
Determining how we manage it going forward.
Well, yes, and I also am going to want guidance on, based on the changes that are done, what is the best way for us, you know, I don't know if the implementation or the just having the conversation with the employee is enough, if there's going to need to be more that's going to be carried out from a change stand, because it depends on how different some of those roles come back. And I need to see that list and be able to say, okay, this person is now instead of an admin 4, they're recommending that this person's an admin 5. What does that mean from a budget standpoint? Do we need to, you know, is this something that we need to change immediately, or
talked about that. We said no. We're going to wait until we do the job surveys.
So that's where somebody. I think we're going to have to think about it though, because if somebody knows,
that, but it's no.
Okay.
That might be too simplistic.
How are we going to do one offsa again, like on all this?
Well, that's, but I thought, Doug, that what we did discuss is, this was how we were going to handle the one-offs, was that if CPSHR was making a recommendation, that's how we were going
to
handle it.
It seems to me
so we have a couple requests during the budget, but those are going to have to come back with different
jobs. That's different. The requests during the budget process is different. But if they come back and they say, you know, Deanna's an admin 4, but technically she's doing the work of an admin 5.
And we give her then that new job title, we're obligated to pay her as an admin 5.
So that's where we look at what they come back with, and then we need to, and I'll see that first, and that's when we need to kind of have.
Well, I hate to sit around hypothetical about what I think I might going to do at some point in time based on what I don't know.
I can't give you any more content than what I have.
Yeah. And again, I'm still waiting. We got to get through this, February 14th to February 24th, before we can get to any hypotheticals of what we're doing.
We should have
or
more
the crosswalk and the report.
I will have more information to share with you before then, because we'll have a cleaner crosswalk table. We will have a better understanding of those employees that are going to be impacted, and we can have a discussion amongst ourselves as to, you know, where we think we want to go with this, how we want to release the information. And if, you know, that's where you say, do we make changes right away, or do we hold on to this content and see when and how we want to release it first? I mean,
and that would be this
point. Yeah, but you're going to have the problem you're going to have is that you may very well have individuals that you're going to have this discussion with. This draft report has said, oh, by the way, your job description, you really are an admin 5 instead of an admin 4. I think that individual is going to be expected to be paid as an admin 5.
And then from when? What's the effect?
But that's what Kathy's saying.
But
that's what Kathy's saying. We are going to have to discuss that when we get to that point.
Yeah. And it's
we have to anticipate that discussion.
I don't support going. I don't support going back in time unless it's a legal scenario where we have to. I would say, just like anything, there's corrections that get made based on assessments that are made, like the salary survey. You know, we do these things to make sure that we are, you know, we're paying and treating our employees equitably. So if we find that there's a mistake somewhere, then we make that correction. We don't go back in time. That's my point of view.
We certainly have gone back in time when we've changed people's step.
But that's a different question than this question.
Yeah, there's always some nuance of those kind of decisions, but this should be more controlled, because this is an overall process that we're using. So think we should be able to work. I'm definitely on Kathy's page there. We shouldn't go back in time unless there is some legal reason for us to do that.
I mean, it is not uncommon. I mean, typically businesses on an annual basis, they're gonna look at, and this is where the internal equity piece comes in with salaries. They're going to look and they're going to see how their people are mapped out within the pay scale and look at credentials, and they're going to go, why is this person below average and this person's above, and we need to make a correction here because somehow these people got off track. And that's what we're going to ultimately need to do with our salaries internally, and we'll, you know, that's going to be considered a correction at that point in time. That's not, you know, we're doing our best to stay on track.
At least you'll have a broad base of one time. We just have to look at everybody globally.
I mean, if we should have
a mistake, may happen.
If we should have been paying someone overtime, yeah, I'm going to say we got to go back in time, and because that's the best practice.
So, given this timeline, what are you thinking about the compensation study?
So I'm thinking a couple things about the compensation study. One, we will be well positioned to have a clean number of how many positions we need to match in the marketplace, or what are the benchmark positions we're going to be utilizing. So I think that at least from a RFP standpoint or getting bids, we will. We'll have clean product to work from. So I think that's a good thing. The other piece of it is, I've talked a little bit about utilizing CPSHR, sole sourcing them. I'm not convinced. I want to see what this result ends up being. The only reason why is because they've worked on all these job descriptions. So they're very clear on, you know, what the positions are, and they already kind of have a leg up on it. I know employers...
That should give them the opportunity to provide a better price than their competitors.
I think we need to wait until we get a product from them.
Right,
see
I agree.
What, anything we
That's
do.
Right.
That's what Kathy said.
Yeah, and the other piece is that there's... And Linnea,
but is your point, if we did an RFP, they might come in lower anyway?
They should. They've got all the inside information.
The other piece is that there's a pay equity law that did that go into effect? The pay equity law.
Yes.
When did that go into effect? I can't remember.
I don't know. I'm but, for something else.
So what?
You have to pay people fairly.
Well, and part of that, we did. You know, we've stopped asking. We just recently updated our applications where we've stopped asking what people have made at their current jobs,
right.
And it's the focus.
2021.
The focus is that you want to make sure you're paying
going
your people equitable to the market and internally. And Employers Council has come out with this whole program of, you know, we're proposing A, B, and C to help our clients. And, I would consider also seeing what Employers Council had to offer. They know this neck of the woods pretty well. And CPSHR, as much as they're doing a great job, I don't think a lot of their consultants operate out of California. So I almost feel like, you know, even though they know our positions, do they know this area as well, and does that make a difference? I'm not sure, but those are kind of some of the things that are coming to mind when I think about it. What?
Where are you going?
Hmm?
What's next?
Anyone have any more? So I would want to start that as soon as possible. Is really what it comes
but
down to.
Practical. In 2020?
No,
it'll be completed in 2020?
Yes.
Okay.
So
I just don't know how long it takes.
In time for the 2021 budget.
That's the goal.
That's what I was asking.
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good. That's okay. All I really wanted to know about that.
So I can move on to the job or the policies related to such, or I can give you a little update on what we are accomplishing related to CPSHR.
Well, don't you need to finish this by November 1st?
This?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I thought we started at 3 o'clock, and I didn't know if Dan Sternad was supposed to be coming back.
Oh, is he supposed to? I don't know.
He's supposed to be here at 3.
Yeah, but he has, like, four other agenda items. He's
talking
about
the budget. Yeah, we got to finish
the budget.
Oh, well, then I can keep going on this. But
I don't think he was coming for this. I think he was coming to. He's
okay.
coming to talk
then
about
I can,
the budget.
I can move forward. But just so that you know, this is content from the evaluation, and this little diagram is what I chose to focus on based on CPSHR's recommendations, and I kind of gave you a snapshot of that on the next two pages, which there's a lot of detail in there. And basically what I wanted to share with you is that this sheet that I provided basically has some of the efforts that we have been carrying out within human resources related to improving processes, document management, a lot of it is little bits and pieces, but it all adds up to actually for us to more efficiently and effectively manage the department. So I know with all the turnover, you guys are probably saying, what is she getting done? So I felt the need to come up with a little bit of detail about how we are little by little making improvements. I also am not going to present this, but we did create a new hire orientation PowerPoint, and I can send you that so that you can take a glance at it. It's still pretty basic, but it talks about, goes into the introduction on the county, it lists all of you, and goes. It's kind of a prettier way of doing the new hire orientation versus just looking at, pieces of paper. I mean, so
thanks
just
for
your reference.
We'll take a look at it.
So, send it. We'd like to see it.
Yeah, I'll send it to you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Okay. Policies. So, Linnea was...
Is this what you're here to talk about?
Okay. Do you want to speak? Okay, so Linnea...
If there's changes, I want to...
So,
just
I think...
like bang on the table if you want to speak.
So, I emailed these to you all.
Yes, you did.
That's okay. I have.
You do.
Okay. Unless they've been changed.
So... we started with the definitions, and I will say that as soon as this got updated, I had people in my office this morning saying, well, how is this going to work? So we have the accrual period here, which is the annual accrual period, and this is strictly for public works and YVRA.
This isn't a change at all. This is just changing language.
This is just changing the language, but you all still need to approve that.
Yep.
Okay. When it comes to holidays, employees are going to receive up to 8 hours of paid holiday leave for official holidays, and then it will be paid at a percentage of the day, which is equal to what they typically work. But this talks about how if an employee comes in, they will be paid at 1.5 times the number of hours worked. In addition, such employees shall be able to utilize the holiday leave they otherwise would have used by electing to be paid for such holiday leave or banking that holiday leave to be used at another date. So that is some of the changes there. It can't be the holiday time. Again, it won't be able to be rolled over. It will have to get paid out. One of the things that was brought to my attention was that if an employee works on a holiday on a Monday and then, or not works on a holiday, they take the holiday on a Monday and then they work Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then they have to work on Saturday. The question that came up with the use it or lose it, is there a reason we would want to allow the employee to get paid for that holiday on Monday at straight time versus reducing that so that they stay within the 40 hours?
How are we going to make a special exception?
I didn't follow that.
So if I work on the holiday and then I have to work an extra day.
I thought you first started off that they didn't work the holiday.
They didn't. I'm still going. I'm still saying the wrong thing. So if I took the holiday on a Monday, and then I work 5 days after that, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, the way that we handle sick and personal days now and vacation is
that time goes back into their bank.
If it's sick or vacation, right.
And so do we want the holiday? I'm assuming we want the holiday time to go back into their bank as well, because we're not going to want to start paying people for more than 40 hours, even if it is just straight time.
I'm not understanding why not, but because holiday is different.
So we're talking about counting the 8 hours holiday time, again, back into the overtime discussion, and still working Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
But it's just they're going to get more than they would just have extra straight time hours. So historically, we like to keep people at 40 hours. So
they get paid for 48 hours that week, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
But not any overtime pay.
Right. Unless they worked overtime. But the reality is that typically we, because now you can't use it to calculate overtime. So, but somebody said, well, if it's use it or lose it, you know, shouldn't we just pay them? And I said, well, from a budgetary standpoint, I don't necessarily know a department head's going to want to pay.
I mean, if the holiday's on Monday, then you take, and you didn't work Monday, then you took the holiday on Monday.
Right.
Right.
I mean, a holiday is a specific day. It's not the same as sick time or vacation time, right?
The question just boils down to, do you think we're obligated to pay them time and a half for coming
in
on Saturday?
No, that's not what I'm asking.
Do we pay them straight time? Would we pay them straight time?
I think
time?
You just pay them for 48 hours that week.
Yeah,
why is that a problem?
And
I don't understand why that's
pay
a problem.
Them for the holiday day.
Okay, because that's not how we've used the personal vacation and sick. Right? Right now, if they go over 40, that goes back absorbed into
their
bank.
So we're paying them already. We've already agreed to pay them 2.5 times for their working. And so
you're going to have that discussion again, right?
Oh, my God.
Okay.
I guess I don't understand why it's a problem. Like, the question that was brought to you is, was someone advocating for it to be treated the same as sick and vacation?
No. They were saying that they thought it shouldn't be treated the same and that they should get paid for the 8 hours of holiday, even though they were going to be working 40 hours for the rest of the week, you know, 40 more hours.
I agree with that.
So do you understand what I'm saying?
Yep.
I still don't. I guess so the holiday is on Monday, which they get paid for.
Right.
So they didn't work on Monday. They're getting paid for the holiday, right?
Yeah.
They're getting paid 8 hours. And then they come in and work Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
And Saturday.
So now they've worked 48 hours in the week.
Yep.
And they get paid for
48
hours.
So it's not a question of whether or not they're eligible for time and a half for Saturday?
No, because they're not eligible because
the suggestion was that should be reverted for them to be able to use it some other time.
No, we should pay them the 48 hours.
That's what I think.
Okay. Sounds like we all agree. Okay. So that'll be something that we will need to...
Yeah, we're not paying them time and a half.
To tweak. Because right now, the other ones all get... put back in people's
Well,
banks.
They didn't work on Monday, so I don't know why they should have some other day that they could take off. That's what it would be, right?
That's
it would
revert
as if they had not taken that holiday.
That's correct.
Which I think is ridiculous.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I didn't understand that part. No, that
was Well, that's what we do now with vacation and
but
sick.
But vacation and sick are different. I mean, you're electing when to take those.
Okay.
Holidays are for a specific holiday.
Okay. All right.
Like Christmas is on Monday. You don't get to just also take Christmas
off.
You're
going to pay them 2.5 times for taking the day off?
Sure. Let's just tell everybody they don't have to come into work, and we'll pay them double the whole year. Just make it really
and they
easy.
They can start their nightly rail.
So, on page 8.2, 8.2.7, that is where...
So 8.2.2 is what we just talked about, right?
And yeah, so that's
that.
Where... Yeah, that's
can
where
I suggest
examples.
One small change on 8.2.2?
Yeah.
The very first sentence, employers not scheduled or otherwise required to work on a holiday... I would say
shall not
work on a holiday.
Shall not be working on a holiday.
Yeah, just say shall not work on a holiday.
I caught that same language.
Okay. Okay, vacation. Are we ready to go to vacation?
Oh, God.
Sure, yeah. We're ready.
I'm okay, ready to
take a vacation. I'm looking forward to Strenad at this point.
Okay, so.
Come on.
This is pretty simple.
Yeah, okay.
So we're on 8.2.7.
So,
correct?
No, that's a holiday. So those were the examples.
Okay,
we wiped out the examples for the holiday.
It all out. Got it.
That said, I was told that we still need to provide examples, but I don't think they
should be.
Will you
tell me why this one is crossed out?
We don't know what that means.
I assumed that it's 8.2.5. I assume it means like if the president declared a day of mourning, that we would treat it like a holiday.
I chose to cross that out after talking to Tom, Eric, and Kathy about that.
Okay.
We're not aware of that ever being utilized.
Okay, that's fine.
And there is a provision later on in the handbook that talks about emergencies, mm-hmm. snow days. I mean, you know, you can throw us one of those once in a while.
Just tell us, like, put the flag in hand.
There's not going to be a snow day.
But there is a provision for it if you guys were so inclined to.
That's not happening.
So related to vacation leave, we just removed all the language that was related to having that person be on the probationary period and that they wouldn't get their accruals until they completed that. So everything else stayed the same.
I have, may I jump down to 8.3.3?
Yes, you may.
I have a concern about the way this language is written because it doesn't make it clear what happens during your 5th year and during your 10th year. Because it has under 5 and over 5 and has under 10 and over 10, but it's not clear which of those categories is inclusive of the 5th year and the 10th year.
At 5.
So that needs to be, I think it needs to be clearer than that.
Okay. Okay.
Take out the over one.
I think you would probably.
10.
Well, I don't even think you need the 10 because it just says when you get to 10, you get that. But
well, I don't care how you write it, but this way it's not obvious which category you're in during those years.
Okay. 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 So moving forward, we updated. Sick leave, so we just changed the accrual. Sick leave is accrued at 6.68 hours versus the 8, so that reduces it down to 80 hours. It's the same as our vacation accrual. And then for personal leave, we increased the number from, 8 hours to 24 hours and put it on here so that it changed the language so that employees would know that it's on a prorated basis based on the budgeted number of hours for the year. And that was something that we talked about with Kevin because he has some individuals that work a maximum of 1,560 hours, but during the winter they may be on a schedule where they're working 40 hours and in the summer they're on a schedule working 20. And historically it was set up that if they took their personal day during the winter when they were working 40 hours, they would get to take 8 hours. And so he said it should just be prorated based on the total number that they work. And we have about 4 employees that fall into that category. So hopefully that makes sense to everybody.
Easy enough.
Next, 13.2, compensation for overtime. We just added holiday leave and comp time will not be counted. Vacation, sick, all that will not be counted towards hours worked for overtime. And removed examples. And then on call time, we updated that as well. Employee will be paid for hours actual work. And then they reference the holiday policy to understand what they would be getting paid if they were working on a holiday. Am I reading that correctly?
Thank you. all of this sounds like what we discussed.
And when
I'm
are we
so
adopting?
Glad. November 5th. So you will officially...
Effective.
November 1.
Correct. Because we have people whose accrual period starts November 1. We're in the process of loading it. It won't show up until the 15th during that pay period. So we're going through the process of making sure that everything gets loaded into the system.
So it only changes for those folks on November 1, right? Everybody else that starts January 1?
That's correct.
They're not changing their accruals or anything. Like
and that. Then ultimately, it sounds like communications, I was a little unclear with the SO, but communications will definitely get added next year to the different accrual period.
I don't want to open a can of worms. I just want to ask a question. I don't think it's going to change. Why do we pay people for 8 hours of holiday pay if they work a 10-hour day or 12-hour day or whatever they might work?
Well, I think the calculation is set up where if we were to do that, then, so for example, the SO, their total number of hours.
Yeah, you're opening can of worms.
I know, but I'm just asking. I mean, I think right now we need to move forward with what we're doing, but just while we're talking about this.
I think it's an equity thing, so everyone gets the same number of hours.
But
of
so
holiday.
If someone would regularly be scheduled for 10 hours that day and they say, I don't want to take 2 vacation hours. I'm going to work those other 2 hours at 2.5 times because that's what you told me my holiday pay rate is. I mean, isn't that a different can of worms that's inequitable?
Yes, that is.
Telling people they have to take vacation hours in order to take the whole day off on Christmas, for example.
But the bottom line is...
What results are you looking for?
Yeah.
Well, I'm just thinking about a holiday, right? A holiday is a 24-hour period.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, it's a... And there are... These are declared holidays. We don't just make up holidays. Like, these are specific days. So I'm
no,
thinking,
we make them.
You can accept them.
Yes, you know. I understand. But, we're talking about Christmas, for example, right?
I can see both sides. I can see both sides of it. I can see where people say... You know, no, it's not equitable because they're getting more hours in a year than, you know, what this person is getting. And I can also understand, well, a day is a day, you know.
Right.
But
I guess that's where I'm at on it. I get what
you're
saying,
though.
But
we don't pay for a day. We pay hours.
So I guess the other side, which I didn't fully think through, so someone could not work that day, get paid for 8 hours. They don't have to do something with those other 2 hours that they otherwise would have worked. They
right.
just are getting paid less for that pay period.
That's correct.
So they don't have to take vacation in order to get paid for that day. They just don't get paid for 10 hours.
I think that they. I do think that they like people to have 40. You know, I think our policy says that it's a 40-hour week.
Our policy does state
but we
40
do
hour work week, but there's the sheriff's office that has. Are they on a 43-hour week? Work week.
They're on an 80.
So they didn't go to that special law enforcement. You can put them on a 43-hour work week so you don't have to pay
them.
And
I thought we were on that for a while.
No, we were on it for a while, but then changed quite a few years ago to where they're on a 40-hour work week.
But I guess back to you, how do you pay somebody? One group of people gets 10 hours paid vacation or paid holiday, and everybody else in the whole world.
I know. I understand that there's some equity issues on both sides.
So hopefully the supervisors will be allowing them to work that up, figure out how to work in that other 2 hours.
Yeah, because you just have to work half an hour every day.
2.5 times for that 8 hours.
You probably have some comp time.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
That's helpful, though, to think about. Like, it's inequitable in to some degree on both sides.
Right.
Yeah. There's some inconsistency in the way people are getting paid for that.
So I will be presenting, I will tweak the policies, the things that you mentioned, but otherwise I will be presenting these same documents next Tuesday for your approval. Okay.
Yep.
Any other questions?
Bring a bottle of champagne. When we actually get it done.
I think it's a win. I think it's a good change. I think it's good for new hires. I think it's
good
for existing employees.
Yeah, why isn't he here?
Why isn't supposed to be here? We'll find it. Yes.
I'm still, just on the record, still just uncomfortable with paying people 2.5 times their wage. That still bothers me to a degree, but I understand there was a long process that we went through to get to this point. I understand that some people are actually receiving less than what they've received in the past as a result of this policy. Maybe it's the best we can do with it. So,
I don't disagree with you, Tim. It seems like too much, but
just try and look at it as 1.5 times, and then you're giving them 8 hours of holiday.
As I'm an old construction worker, if I work that day, I'm getting paid 2.5x. Thank you very much. I will volunteer for every one of those days. I will work every single holiday, and I usually work a lot of holidays.
Out there at the ranch, we have no holidays, and we get paid.
Well, I mean, most of the time,
we don't even get paid straight time.
If they'd offered to pay me 2.5 times to come back and work on Christmas Day, my wife would have tied my shoes and pushed me out the door.
Well,
go work, son.
In this community, you pretty much expect you're going to have to work on a holiday because everything's
there's
still
snow.
Open.
Well, and there's snow. And when you plow the roads, doesn't care
there's that
what
too.
Day it is.
And too. Law enforcement still has to provide
absolutely.
Security.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Kathy.
Well,
thanks for all your work on that.
Thank you. My exercises real quick.
Okay, have fun.
Give me 3 minutes, I'll be out.
I should start doing my exercises in my office, too. Okay, show me where the gravel budget is. Is it also...
It's in the same place.
It's on that same place.
Within a couple pages of that.
But it's on a different page.
Yeah.
Okay, here. A little gravel.
God, I have a hell of a time keeping up with her. I'm telling you, really hard time.
I understand.
I'm trying to be nice.
You did great.
Wait! Let's move on. I'm hypothetically going to figure out what I'm hypothetically going to do when I hypothetically get to that point.
I think she's doing better, too, though, explaining.
Yeah.
You know what I realized is she doesn't pause. I think that's part of it. She just keeps going. And so then you kind of have to interrupt her. I don't know if she realizes she does that, but I don't think it's intentional. She just kind of keeps going. So I think that what Mike Morty sent us matched this.
Yeah, it did.
It matched what we thought should happen over here with leveling, but then I didn't know what he was talking about with the gravel. Let me look back at what he said. I'm still baffled by this. So this is gravel. So he said for gravel, he believes that 2020 should be 433, which is what this says. That 2021 should be 414, which is higher than what this says. And that 2022 should be 429, which is higher than what this says. And then for
Can I ask the question as to why we accrue holidays? That'd be more of a fundamental for me.
Like why you accrue holidays instead of just paying.
So you spread it out over the whole year versus...
Like, why does it have to be an accrual?
They're highly loaded during the first
Right. Well, instead of just you can count those hours for that day, right? I mean, yeah, wouldn't that be the other way you do it? Even if you don't work, you count it as a day work.
You can load them, but you can only...
And everyone told me it didn't, so sorry about that.
No, that's
okay. I didn't look that hard, so...
I'll give you hard copies, too, so...
It's the same as when you emailed us yesterday.
Yeah, only it's in one package. So the first item, I think, is what you guys wanted to talk, is accounting temporary position, plural. And I'm going to go to page 4. I don't know how much of you read of this.
I read the whole thing.
You read the whole thing. Okay. Yep. How do you want, I mean, if you've read it, I mean, this is, I mean, I tried to explain to you, like, as far as your questions of when something is going to end, where are the temporary positions going to be, you know, so what they're going to be working on, and...
So you indicated that you thought that you wouldn't need these positions anymore in 2021. Do you think that's accurate?
We'll see. I mean, I, you know, it's...
Well, that's why we're here.
Yeah, I, you know, it's you know, some of those phases are, you know, 18 months at a pop, and I don't know exactly what that means as far as, I mean, implementations are, you know, they give me 18 months, okay, but we've got multiple streams or phases where, you know, like we got procure to pay, we've got the capital idea, we've got a bi-weekly concept out there, and then this chart of accounts thing, which might be an animal in and of itself, so...
So who gets to decide whether we do any of that stuff? That'd be us. You know, and the GFOA, and I read through your thing, and I'm just sitting there going, really? 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 And how are we going to get any of that done when we have all of it being thrown in our face? So that's what I've been asking here all along. I mean, the GFOA study in itself, it just seems like it's... A lot.
The points that they're bringing up.
Yep.
You know, it's
and to accomplish them. I mean, aside from the temporary accounting, I mean, temporary accounting stuff.
Right.
So it's not been determined. I mean, it's not been determined what of the GFOA recommendations are going to be implemented. But what I hear you. From you, is that correct?
That's correct.
Right. Okay. No, we have.
But
no.
you're stating that if we were to implement all of what we believe the recommendations are going to be, because we haven't gotten the recommendations back yet either, right?
Well, we got that list, and they are kind of going down similar streams, if you will. You know, like when
those
I say
are just findings.
Yeah. And they are kind of go down like the procure to pay or the you know the project grant and that kind of thing. So there are similarities. Let's put it that way. From what we had in the ERP, you know, which you know that some of that software that was part of our approval of the contract and that kind of thing. So there are similarities in that sense that. You know that the projects are showing up in both places at the same time, and can we? Yeah, you know, it's just a matter of like how much do we want to bite off at one time, and that's
what I'm asking.
Yeah,
and when
yeah.
do we decide, and how is that going to be decided?
Right. And well, in the end, that's what I was asking. I was like, you know, there's a long list out here, and it's which ones do we want to? You know, what's our priority? I mean,
can we sort of stick to talking about these positions? So I understand from what you're saying here that if the GFOA recommendations are going to be implemented, you've laid out for us how much work you believe is going to be required for your department in order to do that, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But knowing that
tell.
We... Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But knowing we haven't fully decided what's going to be implemented and yet... And when? I mean, theoretically,
so
all these things are going to
here?
Just be in
yeah.
one year.
She's recording.
But we're not taking.
She's going to write down. She's
are we doing notes. Written up minutes? Or she's taking the decision items that
she's
we're doing?
She's going to take the decision
items. Okay, that's fine. I just want to know what the hell's going on here. That's fine.
You're good. So I guess if separate from these GFOA items... I mean, those positions were created in order to support ERP implementation, yeah. Correct? Mm-hmm. So what is the remaining need of those positions for that specifically, without adding these new things, which we haven't determined are being added yet?
I appreciate that. Yeah. That's kind of maybe where we're at.
When you say new things, okay, so I would say, okay, the chart, let's just go through. So the chart accounts, that's kind of a new thing. That came out of GFQA.
And we haven't decided for sure on that.
No,
yet.
And I don't know what that means. Other than it's like, okay, definitely like the project grant concept out there.
Yep.
That, the things that already, you know, like, well, maybe I can.
We can just go through. That's fine. So the chart accounts is a maybe.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, it depends on.
It hasn't been determined.
Right. We still don't need a chart of accounts for like, project grant and asset management. We haven't created that yet. I mean, that's part of the ERP that we have not implemented yet. And that was part of the original plan, is to do some of those things. So there's that out there. Then
it's what project grant and what?
Asset management.
Here, maybe, you know, I'm looking here, if we look on page 11 here, these are the ones that's kind of a summary, instead of going through all the verbiage part. These are things that we have in the contract right now with Munis that are, they're part of the contract where they're to be implemented, is what I've got here. So we've got, like, under purchasing accounts payable and procure to pay, we've got the vendor self-service. And do you want me to explain some of that, what that is, or
we know what that is.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So then we got employee expense reimbursement, e-procurement, and purchasing cards. And so that's still... that's all part of that procure to pay. And then however we accomplish that, that's still out there. And then the transparency portal, that's another one of those things that, you know, that was getting our data out to the public and that. So now budget, we bought the budget package, you know, primarily just to get the import of information from our Excel spreadsheets into the budget package. And then, my first concept out here is that this is one of the things I was hoping to do before we stopped the implementation, is to actually do this forecasting salary and benefits. We replace our spreadsheets, and as far as estimating step market adjustment health insurance, I think it's going to do what it says, but then again, you know, it's Munis, so we don't always know what they're going to get ourselves into. And then we got the capital idea. So you got project grant, which is, you know, the front end of like either a fixed asset or a capital asset, and then the grant that's associated with it, and then you have contract management, which would be managing that contract that goes along with the project. And then capital assets is actually the inventory of the capital assets, depreciation, disposals, and replaces the spreadsheet that we have here today. And then asset tracking is basically doing the inventory with a barcode system. Inventory, just in general, that's parts and pieces, and then like at the airport, it's food, liquor, and gift ideas. And then asset management is basically taking the maintenance on of those, like it's a vehicle or a piece of equipment. You know, what are we putting into that time-wise, operating material-wise? And then also we can do the same thing like with a bridge, a road, building, that kind of thing. So these are all things that are still in the Munis contract out there. And then we got treasurer, we got the general billing, citizen self-service, cashiering, and then an interest revenue allocation. Applicant tracking, you know about, and then disaster recovery, that's something that we need to test as far as the cloud, and that's what we'd be on there, a cloud backup out there. So
these are all things that we already bought through the 2018 the ERP that have got implemented.
Correct.
So which ones of these are you saying that we're not actively implementing any of these at this time? Yeah, sure, we're doing some of them, right?
No,
we're not currently
doing them on spreadsheets. Excel.
We're not currently implementing any of this right now.
Applicant tracking is scheduled for February.
Yeah.
That's, I think, the one of the few that's scheduled.
Right.
And that one doesn't really have an impact on accounting.
No, that's mm-hmm. HR.
Applicant tracking.
So I've heard Dan Weinheimer allude to the possibility of deciding on some of these that we don't need to keep just waiting around for. I mean, what's been the discussion with the Munis? What's that group called? You guys have a committee, don't you?
The support
group. The support group. The steering committee about what is the highest priority to implement? I mean, there's no way that you're planning on doing all of this in the next...
And then to add on the GFOA thing on top of the Munis.
GFOA has this list, so that's part of the overall GFOA discussion.
Is
having them help us in determining that next step, you know, based on what we've got and what we aspire to do, to sort of help us prioritize.
So it's conceivable that GFOA will come back and recommend that we don't implement some of these.
I think it's entirely conceivable.
One would hope,
like not immediately.
Yeah, they even said that, and there, you know, there needs to be a prioritization.
Yeah.
On how much we can do, so, yeah.
Do you suspect that you'll agree with their prioritization?
Well, I think it's going to be, it's a team effort, right? I think it's, in the end, I think, hopefully, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, where I live, the best bang for the buck right now is probably that procure to pay, that top area right there. I mean, just because it has an e-procurement potential out there, and then it also has a purchasing card, which our credit card right now, it's terrible to use. I mean, it has a lot of pitfalls, and plus I think you're going to get a refund to pay for some of the cost of that. Like you get a refund back from the purchasing card company and that kind of thing, plus e-procurement is going to streamline the process again, and I think employee expense reimbursement is part of that. So it's just some parameters along with the P-card that goes in there, and vendor self-service. It cleans up some of the purchasing side of that, as far as like putting, instead of the purchase orders going out through the individual departments, they would go through purchasing, actually, which is one of the things that GFOA recommended, that, it makes sense. I mean, as well. And then the other side is that, with vendor self-service, they're actually going to be seeing where is that PO in our system, or where is it getting paid, or whatever it happens to be out there and stuff like that.
So is any of this stuff relevant to the new ERP?
Oh yeah,
the old ERP. Is it
the applicant tracking was? For
well,
sure.
No, I got it. Yeah. So, but are the rest of them going to be the same with the new version of the
The 2019 version? Sorry, yeah. You lost me there. I think they'll be improved. Everything seems to be improving. I don't know the vendor self service and all of those things. I think there's some tweaks to it, but I don't think that there's any loss of functionality.
But none of these would be implemented prior to doing the upgrade anyway, right?
The only one that you could, probably not even.
Probably not.
Okay. No.
So it doesn't really.
We're having, so we have had some conversations. Julie and I have talked a little bit about this module or the set of modules around the e-procurement in particular and around purchasing generally. That there is some bandwidth. The e-procurement, you might be able to try to get that implemented before 2019 is live. I don't know. She's optimistic. Mm-hmm. I am less optimistic about that. And I'm trying to be realistic about that. But that, there are some things in the system we have now that will create efficiencies, I think, for tracking expenditures and for less data entry around expenditures that should save time for staff. So those seem to be a priority in my mind.
Just like Amazon, when you say okay, or whoever else those are out there.
And also paying requisitions.
Can you explain what these staff members are doing now? I mean, we have these temporary FTEs.
Right now, for the last, we started out the year with being behind by, the three FTEs, and then 10 months behind on our monthly financial statements. And
when you say three FTEs, you mean of overtime?
However you want to look at it, we have budgeted for basically 10 FTEs that include the two temps,
right?
And then we tracked our time basically on how many hours we put into the project and that kind of thing, and we came out three FTEs above,
including
that,
the two temps
after the two temps. So you had
five, including the two temps.
If Harvey, I mean, we should have had five temps on this project, but we, it took time. I guess when we look at the workload that we do in accounting, it doesn't, when we close a set of books or something like that, that doesn't disappear. I mean, we can't shift from, it's our foundation to be timely with our financial statements and that kind of thing.
So I wasn't here when the ERP was started and these were put into place. So I'm going to just reiterate my question. What is happening that's different now than before these two additional temporary FTEs were in place? What are they doing?
What are they to help us with? Okay,
what do you need them for?
Okay, so anytime you do implementation, it's taking your base staff or whatever you out there away from what they're normally doing and stuff like that. And so whatever it happens to be, I mean, that's where we're talking about, whatever you know, if it's accounts payable or if it's the AR system or building our financial annual financial statements in the new software. Big part of the thing was when we build our import-export from the treasury system into our Munis system and that kind of thing. You know, say we got rid of, in that particular case, we brought rid of, you know, like the individual department was booking a transaction, treasurer's office was booking a transaction, and then we were booking a transaction. So by building that import, we got it down to the originating part of building the transaction into there. So we got rid of two entries there, basically. So all of that implementation, and I guess you can on page 12 is what modules we did implement out there, you know, some better than others and stuff like that. But that's the stuff that we did get done. And anytime I, you know, implementations are not, you know, they take time, and that's what I guess I've shown you guys, and to a certain extent, but and. So
I guess an easier question. So there's nothing rolled into the new Munis. That whole thing had to be created from new. You didn't roll our fundware program into there.
Oh, no. Some of the history.
To answer her question, you in essence have to create a whole new company in the new Munis system.
Chart of accounts. Yeah, we had to start from scratch, yeah. And it's like, and then, you know, like what we did get, we were able to pull into is some of the historical numbers, like for 16 and 17. And then 18, you know, we went live. So it was, so that was the first year of real numbers that we got into there. But, and then you had some historical budgets. Had a lot of difficult time just trying to, you know, like a lot of that data conversion stuff didn't work, especially in the AR area and the AP area. We just had to kind of like, again, basically start from scratch. You know, and like bank. You know, we did, like, with the treasurer's office, there wasn't really assistance in there, and so that's where we built the import, and then also got the bank reconciliation process working, and, you know, we're way far behind on the bank reconciliation problem, you know, at the beginning of the year and that kind of thing. So, and then, like, with the AP system, you know, we had all kinds of issues with the scanners. There was a decision made to buy the wording would be like scanner was supposed to do everything a physician could, but really didn't, and that beat us up pretty hard for like almost 2 months of that front end on that thing. And once we got some Fujitsu's in there, it worked a lot better. Live and learn, I guess. But it's an implementation. I don't know, you know, and I don't know if I really had, you know, like I tried really hard to figure out what it was going to take with staff, and you know. Relying on Munis to say, okay, can we get this done within a reasonable amount of time, and then finding out that, yeah, we bit off way more than we could chew. I mean, I relied on who I could rely on, you know, because I don't, you know, we don't do this every day. And we did try to enlist GFOA, you know, at the beginning of the process there, and then they basically weren't interested, and I don't know for what reason, but they weren't part of the package when we decided to implement. They said, you know, they'd give us 3 months to kind of transition with the contract and that kind of thing, but not the actual implementation. But now they're, you know, they're willing to help us now. So I think they have a much better idea. You know, like when they said procure to pay, you know, and they said it was going to take like 18 months to do that. I think that's, you know, if you got that amount of time to go.
18 months for who? For how many people and whatever to?
Well, that's to go from the beginning to the end.
Yeah,
you know, and that's
for one person. I mean, we're going back.
See, that's the hard part.
18
I mean,
months.
So I hear you talking about why these people were needed over the last few years, mm-hmm. and I totally understand that. I know that a software conversion is huge. There's a lot of work, and it probably wasn't fair for all that work to be on the accounting department. It probably should have been managed a little bit differently, from my observation. But I guess. I'm a little worried that we're sort of just funding these two FTEs in perpetuity without a really clear explanation about why and what's happening. And I don't want to be unfair because I know that I don't understand everything about this, but like I see the treasurer's office where they were way behind and Lane sort of rearranged some things, got them all caught up. Didn't add any FTEs to do it.
Oh, yeah, she did. She added one.
She rearranged. You're right. She did add one FTE.
And then it was supposed to have been a temporary Munis thing.
That's right. She did make a change.
Yeah. And we got to, in there we actually got the right staff too, I think.
I understand. Yeah. I understand. But I guess I still don't really understand what they're doing besides just supporting the day-to-day operations, and I'm worried that if we don't put some bookends on this, and I'm supportive of you having what you need to make this happen, but if there's not, that this they just become two more full-time FTEs. And so,
where's the finish line, buddy?
Yeah, and not just like tell me a date, but what's the plan? I mean, what's happening here, and how do we make sure that we're able to move away from that?
I feel, okay, so like in that procure-to-pay area, I think that's I think it's, at least in my estimation, I mean, it's hard to say again because it's an implementation, but I think that a lot of that can be implemented within the next year, something like that. It depends on, you know, like, I think we need to have, I like the idea of having GFOI come in here and you know, because they've seen so many implementations and stuff like that to walk us through the steps and stuff like that, whatever that means. I don't know exactly what that means because we haven't really ever done that. Other than like with our RFP, which I did, I found that was very useful, okay, as far as like how they helped us through the RFP. I'm thinking they'd do the same thing with that. I mean, clean up, were there resources that they've seen it before, whereas we don't have to reinvent the wheel and that kind of thing. So I'm thinking that there are some things in there that whole procure to pay could take, you know, with maybe the 18 months, whatever it is, but I think that's definitely achievable, let's put it that way, I think.
What are the current two additional FTEs?
We're not actually going to, I mean, we're going to help out some that with that area. I think that's going to be more purchasing and, you know, where we're going to be involved is like probably the vendor self-service with the accounts payable person. Sean, one of the county managers, you know, he's kind of gone through this thing too. And then Julie, I think is, you know, she's done it twice, I believe, already, something like that. I mean, we have to give them a chart of accounts. Whether or not that we change that chart of accounts, I mean, that's a risk we take. We can get that put in there. And then if we change our chart of accounts, well, we have to change that again too. But I mean, that's just a risk. I mean, you know, we get rid of that. So that's probably not the area where we're going to. You're asking what can we get done, and then like where's my staff going to be and stuff like that. We're going to support that, but probably not with those temporary FTEs too much.
Maybe a better one. Let's just say for sake of argument that we committed to allowing you to keep those two additional FTEs, the temporary ones, for 3 years. Did you get everything done?
I sure hope so. That's a bit much. I don't think we're going to be out there 3 years. I'm hoping that, I mean.
2 years, so maybe even conceivably in 2 years, 2020, 2021, the additional FT, the temporaries that you have now, you pretty much knock out this list.
The area where I see that there might be some more opportunity just because of the amount of detail that we're, you know, dealing with, I think, you know, like we could get through project grant contract management, which is also kind of started with purchasing out there. Capital assets, you know, like I said, getting that back into the, getting that inventory of capital assets automated. That's the start of your asset management system because they have to have something to get, you know, something to track records on or time and material and stuff like that. But so I'm sitting there thinking, and then the asset tracking, I mean, that's doing barcodes. I would say that within 2 years we should be way good into that first four items right there, project grants, your asset tracking, and then even to a certain extent, you know, like asset management itself, because we're going to start, you know, like we start off like with say motor vehicles equipment pool and get a good feel for that, what that means, you know, to start tracking their costs or their time and costs onto those pieces of equipment and that kind of thing.
What I'm hearing is every single one of these items on page 11 would be kind of nice to go ahead and implement if we could afford to do it.
I guess it's the bang worth the buck.
And that was the next thing I was going to say. Let's say we're talking two temporary FTEs for a couple of years, probably talking $500,000, right?
Yes.
Yeah, right in that.
Plus the money we're paying the GFOA to help us implement.
Or closer to $400,000 for two. I mean, you're talking $230,000 a year.
Yeah, that's pretty close. So,
yeah, a year.
Is a $500,000 investment for us to make at this point in time. is what we would get out of it, is it worth $500,000? And I know that's a really big, broad question. Really, sure. Probably impossible to answer, but from my perspective, that's what I mean, if fully implemented Munis, and it does all the things that we ever hoped it would do, and it streamlines our operations, it makes us more efficient, it, you know, that's something I can live with.
Mm-hmm. Also, you know, excuse me, we have additional capacity that we've added with the ERP manager with Helena Taylor, mm-hmm. and, you know, helping us plan through these processes and make sure that they're going to be, we're going to be able to take them on in the sequence that they need to happen. You know, and another thing, the difference between where we started and where we're at now is that we are doing the assessment. GFOA would have preferred to have done this assessment before we took on the new ERP. The thing was, we had the fundware going down on us. We couldn't wait. So
it's also probably safe to say that Dan or we or all of us collectively underestimated what the cost of implementation was going to be. I mean, you're sitting here telling us two people wasn't really enough.
It wasn't.
It was not enough.
But even we didn't do the whole thing yet, so.
So I could go back. But it's water. Hold on. It's water. It's all water under the bridge.
Absolutely.
Right now. Whether or
Absolutely.
Not we did the assessment in the right sequence, whether or not we should have had more people, we are where we are today.
That's right.
So the question is, how much more money are we willing to spend to get to the finish line? Is it worth it?
Yeah, I'm still back to the bang. Is bang with the buck, and you know, and is this worthy of, you know? And I still struggle with what's broken now. So, you know, other than, you know, it's time, man. I mean, it's just more time intensive, I assume, with the things and entering two and three times.
Yeah, we cleaned up the. I would have to say, you know, we cleaned up the bigger items. For sure, you know, like with the receipt system and stuff like that, and then definitely like with the time and labor with the, you know, the paycheck system, people didn't like that. This is a much better system.
No, that's
right now,
absolutely. That's, you know, that's and, good to be out of that thing.
And then I would say, you know, okay, so I'm going to kind of go back to the capital area there. You know, like right now, Road and Bridge puts their time in on a sheet of paper, then it goes to the Well, I don't even know if they're doing that right now, but it used to go to, like, the administrative assistant, and then they didn't put that into PubWorks. And, you know, like, what this system would do is basically those guys, instead of putting it on a piece of paper, they'd record their time just as part of their regular payroll package, you know, submitting their payroll and stuff like that.
Which is the right way to do business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you'd actually have a, you know, right now, who knows what this, I mean, when you tie that thing to payroll, it makes it, it's real.
So, yeah, but if you go back and you know, Beth's asking, you know, why we need the extra two people, and then what we're asking, and somehow we're going to end up having to prioritize these things. Yours sounds like you're self-prioritizing the purchasing module.
It makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, there's things, you know, like we can clean up that the credit card thing. I mean, that's a mess.
You know, that Elon thing.
It's a mess.
Yeah.
And it puts people, you know, people's
And then on credit top of being late, and then we get an audit write up because we're late fees.
Yeah, and then you got, and then they don't, they get new staff in there, and they put the stuff in the wrong accounts, and then it's, and then we end up doing the fix for them, and it's but I think you're going, and then plus you got the people, you know, like your own credit, your Social Security is on that card and stuff like that, so it's your own credit, which I don't think is right either, but. I you know, like that one, I think that's going to be a lot of pluses to a lot of different people out there. You know, like with administrative people being able to buy things through e-procurement because, you know, you can, like an Amazon or whoever it happens to be. And then the same with the P-cards, I think that's going to simplify that system. It's going to be able to, you know, you're going to be able to... You're going to be able to manage it, the purchasing card a lot more than you were
before. So we all agree that almost all of these things are really worthy things. We ought to try to implement. I'm also hearing from you that as of right now, all you can do is actually provide a guess to the Board of County Commissioners as to how long this will take. Might be 2 years, might be 3 years.
I'm not so, I hope not. Let's put it that
well,
way.
If I add these numbers up, we get to 3 years real quick.
Well,
18 plus 6 plus 14.
Well,
plus
if each one individual, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
but I have to imagine it takes longer if you're doing more than one at the same time, right?
Maybe, yeah. Well, but like I'm saying, like purchasing is going to be mostly in the purchasing area. We got to get so I think that's going to be not so much accounting. Whereas,
I want to say something different.
Okay.
I don't want to talk about these modules anymore. It sounds like we're going to get, I mean, we can talk about them more, but I'm just stating that. It sounds like GFOA is going to give some recommendations, and it's clear we need to prioritize these. I'm really, in my mind, here's what I would ideally like to see. We don't need any additional FTEs, and we are implementing these at a rate that is reasonable, that does not require additional staff in order to do it. And I get that we just went through this huge implementation, and that software, a big software implementation, takes a lot of time and a lot of energy. And now I hear that we have some other things that maybe we want to implement, but the idea that we couldn't, as an organization, ever do anything new without adding temporary FTEs, I really, really struggle that we can't move forward and modernize our practices and become more efficient without having to have FTEs on board, additional FTEs on board. So what would be the rate of implementation that would need to take place in order for us to not need additional staff in order to implement? I mean, we added one full FTE in the IT department in order to help with Munis and ERP implementation. And I understand that this is too much to try to do all of this with our current staff. But in reality, what we should be doing is implementing at a speed where with paying for consulting services, which we are doing and we're going to do no matter what, that we could implement it with our current staff. That we lay out a plan that is realistic for doing that. That's where I think we should be. I'm not saying we're going to get there, but that, in my opinion, we should be able to do that.
So the bigger thing that we really don't know, we don't know how many we should be having as a permanent accounting staff. So how can...
Eight.
I mean, say what?
Dan said eight.
Eight as opposed to ten.
So you agree that there's not any reason that those temporary FTEs should become permanent FTEs. You don't believe that that's where we're headed.
I think I heard him say that if everything went well, they'd be gone in 2 years.
Well, but I also heard him say, I said, could we cut them next year? And he said, oh, well, I don't really know. I mean, that's...
At the end of this year?
Well, or next year. The end of next year. Either, really. I mean...
Well, okay, I'm still looking at the holistic thing here, not just with, okay, you know, we still got biweekly, we still got whatever we're going to do with budget and priority-based budgeting and that kind of stuff, and I don't know what those impacts are going to be either, so...
But hold on, I want to just reiterate, it seems ridiculous to me that we would state that the accounting department can never change anything with our current staff capacity. You're not saying that, are
No,
you?
I'm not saying
okay.
that. I'm not saying that. I mean, but given the size of what we're trying to pull off here...
I understand that.
That's... even this, the capital area. I mean, that's...
But let's assume we're not trying to pull this off.
Not
we're trying to
comment.
We're trying to pull off what's realistic for us to do with our staff and the capacity that we have.
Well, it sounds to me that the obvious answer to that would be, is instead of being done with this in 2 or 3 years, we'll be done in 6 or 7.
Well, we have to define what done is, too.
That's true.
Yeah.
Because in 6 years, there's going to be some new other thing that needs to happen. I mean, that's how technology works, too.
We're keeping this up for 30 years.
Well, that yeah, we should. That's true.
And how'd that work out for you?
It worked great for 30 years.
Yeah. Okay.
It did. That's what we ran pretty much. We ran probably longer than 30 years with Fundware. So that was what we had before Munis. So.
I guess I totally hear what you're saying. I completely understand the point that you're making, but it sounds like it would be a little bit disruptive to pull the plug on it at the end of 2019.
What's already disruptive?
I know.
The whole thing's disruptive.
Well, yeah.
The interesting part about what we've got here is that, when I look at the capillary, those are things that we have a spreadsheet for. It's, and then we got to understand how we stick them into that Muni software, and that's, it takes time. You know, and then we also have, you know, we're paying support on some of that stuff. We should, I mean, if we're not, I don't know what that means. I mean, at some point, we would need to do a cost benefit to say, at what point, you know, like, does the support cost equal the cost of the license? And then, or even before that, and say, okay, we're going to back out of this because we're not going to get to it. And
well, and I think we should have.
And the reason
is that we can't get to.
Yeah, we should not. And then wait until the next update.
And I don't know. I don't know what that. You know, I don't know
if we'll get Robert's back. Already planning on having. You know, we're not going to wait 5 years and 7 years to get an update. We're going to start having the normal procedures. What?
Oh no, yeah. Well, Munis, that's already planned in Munis.
Yeah. We can drop the prescription. The prescriptions. Yeah, that we have now.
Subscriptions.
The
licenses. Yeah.
Yeah. Oxycodone.
Couldn't we all?
Right.
Well, here's what I would love to see. Ideally, I would love to see. What is the ERP team called? I'm sorry. ERP steering committee come up with a plan in which next year at this time we are not funding these temporary positions anymore. And whatever that implementation plan needs to look like. So we have 1 year, we're going to figure out which of these modules we want and we need, and we're going to prioritize them so that in 2021 we are actually not funding these temporary FTEs anymore. That's what I want to see.
I don't know. It feels just a little bit arbitrary to me.
It's aggressive, Tim.
Okay.
Yeah. It is a little bit arbitrary, but it's where we are now.
It's
I don't
want to
say 2 months from now we're done. Right? But if we don't set a timeline on it, we're never going to get there.
No.
And, you know, work expands to fill the number of people you have available to do the work.
So,
I think we have to define it the other direction.
So maybe a slight middle ground would be to go, hey, we're going to fund these two positions for 2020. I think that's what we should do. But would we have enough information from the GFOA recommendation that by June of 2020 that you could come back to us with like a more hardcore plan? Because I mean, I'm not criticizing you. I'm saying you're giving us no certainties about any of this, and I understand
why.
Because you're not certain about what's going to happen again. Is there a way that we can get to a higher degree of certainty about the long-term outlook by June?
I would hope that we have some of that before even then.
And then June, at least we'd be going into the 2021 budgeting cycle with a plan. And whether that is eliminating those temporaries, whether it means keeping them on, whether it means dropping back to one, at least we'd be making a plan that was based on some real foresight rather than.
No, I got you. I mean, that doesn't.
I totally understand drawing a line makes things happen.
Well,
sometimes.
What you're missing is that doesn't mean that there would never be any change in that plan.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is, I think that's what we should be shooting for: is that a year from now we are prepared to move beyond having these temporary FTEs to get out of this crazy implementation.
Oh, I love we've stop the implementation.
And to move on. Yeah.
Yeah. Literally.
No,
yeah.
I mean, I get
it. I would
it.
Like it to be normal.
I really do.
Whatever normal
is.
Let's move on. I think I'm fine.
Okay, we need a plan.
Yeah. And again, I don't know. We can come back in 6 months.
I'm with you.
3 months and 6 months and have further discussion about it.
We're going to fund them for next year, man.
Okay.
We need that. Don't worry.
Okay.
But
you know, it was a really good discussion. I think we had to have this.
And I do think we have to keep pushing on, like, what needs to be done and when does it need to be done and who needs to do it. And
right.
Not just sort of, we're just gonna keep
going. I
want to
make sure we have a realistic list.
Yes.
That we can, that they're accomplishable and the rest, and that, you know, we're not shooting for the sky and having. Yeah, for sure.
That sounds good. Thanks, Dan.
What's next?
Okay, so then I'm going to go to open budget items out here. So we got presentation of the fine budget support. We got Humane Society.
So you heard us say we're funding that Humane Society request.
Yes. I hope they still exist. I don't understand that. I don't understand their budget. Let's put it that way.
Well, they've been subsisting with half as much from us.
Something doesn't make sense, does it? Right?
I think they're a nonprofit. They make it up with fundraising. That's
a lot of fundraising.
It is a lot of fundraising.
It is. Yeah. And then we have ASAID tomorrow on Yampatika. But I think those are probably going to maybe stay.
I don't think we're going to change the numbers on those. So this current budget that you... This number that you gave us, that has the lower number for the Humane Society, though, correct? Or does it have the higher number?
It has a $44,000.
So we just agreed today to fund it
at
more than that.
Oh, what did you fund it at?
Well, their request
was... We're
going to
fund it at 80.
Their request was at 80.
Oh, yeah. We had 40. Oh, we have the... Well, it's 30 plus 44. The change is 44.
Okay. So is that already in there or not? Is that already in there, or do we just eat up our surplus? That's what I'm
saying. No, you're good. I think you're good, because we're going from, 39,000 plus the 44.
So that's already in these
budget.
Numbers?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's still a little low.
No, we're not going to 39 to 44.
No, you're going 39 plus 44.
Plus 40.
Yeah.
Right. But that 44 is not going to come out of this number.
No.
Okay.
No.
Thank goodness.
And then we have...
Go.
Yeah, then there's
just
these next four. This is the 4 cents. You guys approved that. We just didn't get it into the numbers yet. And then facility management. We talked to Ray and Steve about that. There's a duplicate UPS in the CLEF, so we pulled that $5,000 out. That's ongoing. And then this is the one. Okay, this one here. And I talked to Ray again on this facility management idea. This new position salary increase. It sounds like we just need to let this dog lie the way it is in the budget, and then you guys will figure it out, whatever the organizational structure is.
We agreed to a placeholder for right now.
Yeah, I don't think we should change it, because we shouldn't change what's in the budget.
Okay.
Is that agreeable?
So what's in the budget now?
Is that a copy?
Additional
it just doesn't,
one?
But it's not funded. We were thinking
correct.
We needed a higher salary number than what is in there right now.
I'm all right. I think
there's something in there that may not be enough.
Right. Because I don't know, because he hasn't talked to everybody yet.
Yeah.
And I don't know we don't necessarily know what the final plan is.
You want to just leave it how it is.
I think that's the best thing. Just for.
And we got some money in there for one additional FTE.
Probably.
Yeah, we got the whatever the.
Probably not enough.
Correct. Yeah. Not if you're going to do what the other plan is.
Yeah.
So
that's fine.
Right. And that's where I kind of estimated, like that $26,800, because you've got to. Basically, assistant director, kind of. So basically, I took what the new position was. Plus,
why are we putting anything in there then for the 26.8?
That's the.
I was just talking.
That's the number for a Humane Society. So you.
Yeah, we're pretty close there. Yeah, 44.30. Actually, we should be there. Yeah. I was putting because I didn't know what you guys wanted to do. So I just wanted to talk talk to you guys about it. My recommendation is to not do anything just because we don't have the plan.
I think we're all agreeing. Right now we need to wipe out this 26.
Correct.
It goes away.
Correct.
That's fine.
Correct.
Yeah. That's your recommendation.
Yeah, because I don't think
yes.
we know enough about what we're really
Until
doing
Until we
right
know
now.
What we're doing.
And then we can always do a supplemental
yeah.
next year or something like
yep.
that.
Yeah, we're all in agreement with that.
That's fine.
So then this next item, severance tax. Okay, so what I tried to do is, we got severance.
In addition to these, I think that leveling and gravel conversation isn't quite completed yet.
Okay.
And that's not necessarily for the 2020 budget. It's more for the longer term
projections,
right?
So this the leveling patching budget, how that came into existence is, I guess, because of the way our roads were falling apart and what have you out there, whether it was a chip and seal or whenever we did a chip and seal or whether we did an overlay, what we did is we put in $504,000 to go between leveling and chip and seal. That's what goes out into the future. And how we look at that is it was kind of an estimate to put $10,000 aside a mile for chip and seal, to do some leveling work out there on front of a chip and seal, or $10,000 a mile in front of an overlay. And it was just a ballpark figure, okay? Because we were doing, it seems like we're not doing as much leveling now, Next year we might do some more because we got, like, not next year, when I say next year, that's 2021. We've got like 19 miles out there, so that's a lot. But
so I guess to cut to the chase, we're really wondering whether the $500,000 is needed and whether we...
If
we drop that years, back it's like
to the average, what we've been using, it's a, you know, 220 or 200 a year versus the 504.
And what we're realizing is kind of happening is we're sort of creating a slush fund for Road and Bridge.
It's holding money. It's not really keeping. Well, it's using up money that could be used someplace else. Absolutely,
and that's our concern.
Yeah. And that was. I don't know, that was established like three directors ago.
So I think we're feeling more comfortable that we would use what's looking more like the historical average, which is probably closer to 200 to 300.
For patching.
So for leveling and patching.
Well, leveling, we haven't been using much of leveling.
Question in my mind here. Yeah. There's two line items on the Road and Bridge budget. One is for leveling, and there's a separate number for patching.
And then it totals $504,000.
Those two
in the budget.
Mm-hmm. Going, we try to be as
and in the graph.
It goes on forever.
Yeah, what we try to do is like in say the 2020 budget, we're saying we're trying to be as realistic as possible with leveling and realistic as possible with patching. So we're dealing with real numbers. I mean, as much as we can with that. But then in the future,
so what's that real number for 2020?
2020 is $500,000. For $504,000, because we're saying it's going to be either leveling or patching going out to the future if we need it.
You believe that in 2020 we're going to spend $500,000 on leveling and patching?
Given it's a 19-mile year.
Even at 10,000 miles, that's only 10,000 miles. That's only $380,000.
$190,000, roughly, for leveling, and then the rest would go to patching. So, it's hard. That's a big year. That's all I'm going to say about that. Because then it drops down to...
2020 is a big year for overlays and chip seals.
Yeah. And then it drops down to virtually almost... I mean, overlay is virtually nothing in the next 2 years.
But we have 2020, 2021, and 2022 at about $500,000.
Yes.
And that's what that's, said, that's what yeah.
It's going to either go either one place or another. Whether,
I gotcha.
Yeah.
We agree with that.
And that's how we built that idea.
Would you be able to give us more years of the historical average on this? Because all we have is 4 years. And I mean, in those 4 years, including this year, I see that the highest is 276.
For patching.
For leveling and patching total.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So that means we've been budgeting it about twice, at least twice. Mm-hmm. And so, again, there's $200,000 plus a year that, again, could be utilized for something else. So I think what we're saying is we want to just be more accurate in those numbers, if it's possible.
Yeah, no, we can't. No, yeah. I mean, all I'm saying is this has been, you know, we've been tying up the money in Road and Bridge so we have at least that idea because our roads were not performing. And
but I think we're also hearing from them that they're just using it for other things, like widening aprons, and I mean that's what.
Well, they did this year, okay. Right. But that was where we were saying, okay, like we really don't. We took it out, okay. We said, okay, you're not. You only have $20,000 of that $227,000.
These two pages right here. It's gone all the way back to 2011.
So that was one of the items we reduced and put it down from 200. $227,000 to $207,000 or whatever it was.
And then about 2013, we did spend a pile of money, right, on County Road 14.
Someplace in there, we spent we did some, you know, major.
When we redid County Road 14, we spent a lot of money.
Yeah.
Was that 2012?
And it would have been 2013 or 14.
And it was 2012.
And that might have
been. Because 2012, it ended up being $750,000.
Yeah, but we didn't do County Road 14 until after I got elected.
All right, well let's
So we don't want to stick in a whole bunch of money for a slush fund. We want to have enough money in there. Cool. And again, it sounds like, I mean, even at your 19 miles, I mean, if we put some number in there,
it probably can be lower.
Less than 500.
Yeah.
Except that there's leveling and then there's patching.
See,
so you're spending
$10,000 on leveling. I would say, you know how we might want to look at this is keep it the way it is for 20 and 21 because we've got a lot going on there, and then address it with our 2021 budget, and then say, okay, what do we want to do? Because we dropped down a lot in
number of miles.
Yes, yes, and that'll give us a little bit of. Okay. Yeah, I mean, we're just not doing that. I mean, it's
so the problem, and you've got us educated enough.
Yeah.
That it's $504,000 yep. for 20 years.
On yeah,
and somehow that needs to be, yeah. and a we're already bit, stashing yeah. all the money into Road and Bridge and the Road and Bridge Reserve.
Right? Mm-hmm.
So, and again, it's our concern is we're still trying to make some type of money for the capital fund, the capital improvement fund, as well as the human services building.
Sure.
How we would do that again?
Yep.
CLEF concept.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. We did that because what we were doing at the time, it was, you know, we had roads falling apart, and yep. it was like it didn't matter.
And that was a question I was going to ask you. Is there a case to be made that we've done such a good job over the last 10 or 15 years of keeping on top of our overlays and our chip seals that we just don't have the need that we've historically had for leveling?
Our pavement indexes are adequate. They're strong.
Yeah.
We even got a new index firm doing it, which we're still haven't seen the results on yet. But
Well, okay, because I was going to say,
as the number comes up, there's driving around our paved roads, it's just hard for me to see that any of them need a lot of leveling for right. overlay or a chip seal. I mean, that's just anecdotal, but that's just me.
I don't even know what leveling is.
So
I don't really care that much.
If you're going to do a chip seal in an overlay, you look at parts of the road that kind of dip down like this, and you need to flatten them out before you do the overlay.
Yeah. There's definitely, when you take care of something, you know, the maintenance on stuff like that, you know, I'm not road and bridge, but I would have to say that if you maintain, it doesn't matter whether it's a building or if it's a road, if you take care of it, you may not have as much of that kind of thing going on. Now, a lot of that has to sometimes do with truck traffic because you're putting heavier loads on a road or something like that, and that sometimes that makes a road deteriorate.
So
faster,
can we lower that number into the future or not?
Yes.
I think it's a choice. Whether or not you want to lower it for 2020.
Yeah.
Well, we already did.
No, we didn't.
We did lower it for 2020. Okay, because we went from
1 year.
He's
one
the one
year.
That told us we could.
Yeah.
Oh,
we yeah.
did lower it for 2020.
Yeah, because we went from 227,000 to 207. Or I mean, 207,000 to 20,000 is what we did. Road and Bridge said we didn't need any leveling. So
in 2020.
In 2020. So we did that, but we kept it out there into the future. Now
on the graph.
On the graph, yeah. It's still going out there $500,000 a year from 2021 on out into the future out there.
So
now,
why don't we arbitrarily move that to $400,000? Just for the sake of moving forward. Still fairly conservative?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm two things. I'm all right with 500 if we're identified and we can salvage it after the year and put it somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But if it just disappears, we should have been not doing that in the first place.
And
we should have disappeared it into the capital fund in the first place. So I don't know how we do A and B.
Disappearing it in the first place is the way to do it if you want to go in the capital fund. And then run the risk of having to do a supplemental if we have...
Or run the risk, well, we put the money into the capital fund,
and
we need to pull it back out, because there's...
Which will be painful to do, so let's put it into the capital fund, so it's there.
I can do the same thing with that committed reserve that we're about ready to talk about. And we can put another, like, basically another... Whatever we do to the $500,000... We could push back into the committed reserve.
Do you have an
idea?
Kind of
what I'm talking about.
Would be a reasonable number to lower that to? I mean, I think it's obvious that the $500,000 has been high for multiple years in a row.
Right.
So there's no.
Well, I can do what I can do is get you the history for the last 10, 11 years or something like that, and we'll run with that.
It's still going to come down to us making a little bit of an arbitrary decision.
Yeah, but he's saying that he has some information he can give us to make it a little bit less arbitrary.
Yeah, I mean, it was like predicting deaths. I mean, we average those for the last 10 years, and that's we never hit it.
That's what an average is for.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you can justify.
And sometimes it's over and sometimes it's under.
Yeah, why is it favorable or unfavorable?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So
is that what you want to do? I mean, I'll put some numbers together for that. And then,
yeah, so I think
that's good. I think looking at the 10-year average would be great.
Something
and just
like that. Okay.
See what that number is.
All right.
So back to Beth's question. We're starting off with a positive annual of 81,741. And that's with the two sheriff's deputies still included and everything for them.
Yes.
So are we going to get that decision off of our plate, or we want to keep...
I think if we have a positive variance, I am supportive of funding both of them.
And you've already said that as well.
I mean, even if we didn't have a positive variance, I was going to be pushing for it.
So we need to take that off the decision table. So okay. I'm all right with that, too.
But you're 100% sure that you've... Because we said we were going to cut the Humane Society budget back to the originally budgeted amount. You're certain you didn't do that? Mm-hmm. Okay.
I didn't take anything off the Humane Society. I mean, I'll look again if I'm wrong, but I don't...
That was when we did. Kendra was taking
yeah.
the notes, yeah.
I don't... No, we didn't.
Okay.
I don't think we could... No, it's still open to be discussed, so I don't think...
Probably in more information.
Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Just, let's see, I was trying to think. So did you guys ever make a decision, like, on the lease for the fair?
The what?
The lease for the Skidster. That was another one.
So, you know, it was another eye, and we didn't get a clue to what the hell was happening there. We all were struggling with
just didn't even know.
Because originally we didn't know if that was a deferred deletion from one of the other departments or a brand new Skidster.
The proposal is to do just exactly
the
what?
The municipal lease.
Yep, like we do at the airport.
Lease, which is about $7,000 a year. Is that what it is?
Something like that.
Short the cash.
Yeah.
But they didn't present that to us, did they?
No. They didn't bring up the lease, no.
Yeah.
No, so you never heard about it. That's where I always said, okay, so we went down through the line items and said, okay.
I feel like if they just put stuff in the budget and they don't ask us about it, I don't think I should get it.
I think he glazed over that.
But
Ray glazed, and then we were already short of time when Jill came up.
So we haven't made a decision on it. We want some more information on it?
I think we did. That's why we said we wanted more information, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it was never...
But I didn't know. I didn't know how that was getting communicated exactly. So I'm still looking at. We still have ASET, animal shelter. Well, you just did animal shelter.
So ASET and Yamateek are tomorrow.
And
and we're not going to probably end up changing the budget amounts on this.
The only thing we had with ASET was, you know, it had been so low all along. I mean, and then it had been really, really high. And then they built up this reserve.
Right.
And then they dropped it.
Exactly.
So, but then if you look at their books, the reserves are still really, really high.
Is it? I haven't
seen
it. Oh, well, then they shouldn't. Then maybe you should change it. They don't really need the money.
Well, I think really, though, we just wanted a presentation from them. Yeah. I don't think we had a question, really, about the...
When you see, like...
But that'll be tomorrow.
Yes.
So we'll know that tomorrow.
So, but if it looks like they still got a whole lot in reserves, they really mean it.
Especially if the sheriff got two new FTEs.
You know.
Back off on us.
The rest of these things are all fun in that full thing, too.
Yeah.
And they actually got steamboat. So we'll get that presentation.
Yeah. Did you have something else?
So what are we going to do about the Skidster? We need to have Jill and Ray in here for the Skidster again? I mean, because we really didn't...
I mean, they can come in. They could also just send us some information. They just never presented it.
So did we end up agreeing to the restructuring and the of time for Jimmy to spend...
I think we did.
Yeah.
Did.
...full time out there?
Yeah.
Well, if you're going to have him out there full time, you better get him the Skidster so you can get some work done.
How much is it, the Skidster?
$6,000.
And is it annual lease, or do we take it as if you lease it for 3 or 4 years?
No, it's an annual lease.
Another FTE with a rate, Tim.
They've been borrowing one from Golden Ridge for a while. Is that what's going on now?
I don't know. I don't know anything. I don't know.
It's all right. You don't have. It's not your responsibility. Right. They really should have presented it.
I'll get ready and give something.
Okay. I mean, honestly, I think just something in writing would be fine.
We had kind of the discussion. He said, well, I have that much more area to plow out. They have more technical area with the trailer, RV park.
Yeah.
And that was part of the
discussion.
I think, Dan, you can probably assume that we're going to end up...
Yes.
Supporting
that's fine.
We would like to get some information from them.
So that's, I think, the only other one that I had
looking
at the list here. And then, so then, let's see. Do you guys have any more questions on items that need to go into the current ongoing status?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Do you have anything else?
Which ongoing?
Just on this list.
No.
Is there anything else that hadn't been
Again, I just want to make sure we're clear, and then about the process of the capital fund and the severance tax.
That's what we haven't talked about that yet. That's next.
That's what we're going to talk about. Yeah. So, okay, so severance tax 2020 budget forecast compared to reserve balance. What I did there is I put out the last 10 years or so of actuals, so you can kind of see what that is, how much we collected from severance tax. And actually, the years before that, we were at $45,000. So that's where we came up with the $45,000 now. So what I did is I took the 11
year. Why did it go up so much?
You know, that was a change in the state
reapportionment, reallocation.
Okay. It was a change in state statute. Now that works out. It really worked out well for us. Let's put it that way. Because I don't think...
Garfield County didn't rank so well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Real Blanco County.
Yeah.
Well, they got all that oil and gas, so they'll be all right.
So I guess the question here, Dan, is why don't we just leave the number being... that's what I thought we were going to do. Just leave the number being the 45.
Oh, well, no. Okay, so what... let me go through what I was understanding, and then you'll straighten me out. How's that? Because what I thought was we were going to actually try to budget more accurately what we thought the severance tax number was going to be, and then we would put that that number, whatever that, like in this scenario right here, I did the 11-year average. We came up with 591. I just said, okay, who knows what that number is, and I just rounded it up to 600,000.
Yep.
Okay, and then what's going to go into the committed reserve is basically... we'll take that 600,000 less the 45,000, which has been in our historical budget.
Okay.
And then that 555,000 will be in the reserve balance.
But really, you would adjust that number at the end of the year. Like if it was a lot lower than, like let's say it ended up only being 300.
Yes.
That's all you would put in the reserve.
Yeah. On that capital fund, right?
Yeah.
Well, it wouldn't go in.
It would be whatever the real number is, and then this is, you know, this is going to be new, so I don't exactly know how we're going to deal with this thing. To make it a committed reserve, we do have to have a resolution, okay, that takes place, so that it, as far as for generally accepted accounting principles for a committed reserve like this, but it documents kind of like how we're going to use that, and that's probably going to be a little bit of a work in progress because when you guys want to use it, you know, that's going to be, you know, like right now we've just been. It comes out as a favorable budget variance, and now you guys are going to want to track it, and what do you want to use it on, right? So that's going to be a different flavor as opposed to just going through the system and shoring up whatever it happens to be that needs to be shored up in any given year, or it goes down to basically the bottom line to be used however you want to use it. But I can do this.
We can commit it, but we can
transfer it out if we can.
Oh yeah, no. Well, that's what. Okay, so
that's the same.
It's committed for this, and then you're going to say, okay, what are you going to use it for in that resolution?
Right.
So, but you're going to use capital. Make it generic.
But if we needed that money for something else at a different time, we could transfer it out.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, looking through the sales tax ballot language, I mean, it already committed. A third of our
20%.
What?
20%.
20% to capital.
Right.
And so, and we're getting by that. I mean, we just buy.
Well, we went way by that.
Yeah. I mean, we're way over that. So, I mean, even so.
So that's it. So is that?
I'm fine with your philosophy.
Is that okay? You're okay with the? You're okay with the?
Yeah. I just like to get to the bottom line.
So we
managed to squirrel away, we think, using these numbers, about $850,000.
Along with building use tax, yeah. Same philosophy. I did, you know, we had 11-year average of $487,000 there. And then I said, okay, let's just bump it up to 500. I think that's still, it probably, I don't know, depends on what goes on with building out there next year, but it could still, it's going to be quite strong, I think. But anyhow, it's a number. And then, so that we, you know, the historical amount that we had in the budget is 235, and so it's be that 500,000 minus the 235, 265, and then so we had 555, and then from severance and 265,000 from building use tax, so you have about $820,000 that would be in that.
I made a down payment of about $820,000 on my new human services building.
Yeah. Your human services?
Yeah, it's the car and human services.
Yeah. You have to die first, Tim.
Yeah, you want it named?
You have to die.
He's changing the standards.
Only Brent Romick gets to do that.
Only Brent Romick gets to do that? So does that feel pretty good there?
Absolutely. Feels great to me.
I mean, at one time we had visions of $2 million. $1,000 that we were going to set.
Yeah, but we still have the money sitting in the insurance pool.
Yeah, you got that, and then you got you're going to have favorable budget. You're going to have some kind of favorable budget variance at the end of this year. Yet, I mean, we did what we did so far, but there's still going to be a chunk of change yet that's going to show up.
So speaking of that money in the health insurance pool, what action do we need to take to actually? Or do we want to take action to transfer that money into a capital?
Personally, I do, but
I don't. You've got a choice. I mean, right now, or
paper than what they need.
Right. I would.
You don't classify this stuff; it'll just disappear.
Well, it's sitting in the insurance. Well, the risk. Okay, it's sitting in the insurance pool. We've had. It looks like. You know, we had 1 month so far this year that, you know, hit the 300 plus thousand mark, and then we went back down to 199 or something like that, 188. We've got what, 2 or 3 more months to go? I would say that, you know, we're gonna, our bet is that it's probably gonna look pretty good out there for the next 3.
Yeah,
next
we're
three
not gonna
months.
Get $2 million in claims in the last.
No, we better not. That'd be bad.
Yeah, that'd be really bad.
That'd really
so, be bad. But so in answer to Tim's question,
yeah.
If and when we decide we want to transfer that money, how do we do it?
Well, you can do it as part of the budget process now. Okay, so it's part, you know, and then it's
or which we would adopt on the resolution.
Right.
Or you
do it as supplemental during the year if you want to do it, something like that. Now, I don't think 2020 is the year we're going to build anything yet. So there's however you want to look at that. I mean, I guess
it might
it's a choice.
Some architectural engineering and other type work.
Well, we already budgeted for that, didn't we?
We got $75,000 in the budget for, I think, trying to find location and whatever else options.
But would we theoretically transfer it to this new capital reserve fund?
Put it in the general fund. Yeah, we transfer it into the general fund, and then we bump up the committed reserve.
So I think we do. I think we need to get it out
so
of there.
I think the longer you let it just sit there.
Exactly.
It
or
just
exactly.
Employees
look like it.
It's in the interest of transparency to our citizens. If that's what we're, how we're really looking at that money, we should say that's how we're looking
that's what
at
we're
that
planning
money.
To spend it on. Yeah.
Rather than just keeping it in the background, and we'll tell everybody about it someday.
Well, and again, even our road and bridge has, you know, the uncommitted reserves in it. I mean, you have
committed. We don't have anything unassigned whatsoever in the county. It's
and I think
committed.
That's a great idea.
Yeah,
it should be earmarked, just like Tim said.
Yeah.
I mean, just to
I mean,
tell
it helps
citizens.
A lot with presentations to the public that is committed for a use, as opposed to once you say unassigned, it's like.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody latches on to it.
Yeah. Drop yes. our mill levies.
Right.
All right. So you're just going to need a number in order to do that.
Well,
is that what we're.
The other question would be, do we want to do it as part of the 2020 budget, or do we want to wait and do a supplemental after we really know how the insurance pool is going?
Let's do the 2020 budget. We already kind of agreed to a number, didn't we? Of the reserve, wasn't it $2 million? Isn't
yeah.
that what?
Yeah.
To keep in the reserve or to take out
in
the reserve?
Reserve.
Keep $2 million.
Yeah,
in the
insurance pool, right?
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that, you know, like, okay, say everything blows up or whatever, and it's a number, it's a budget.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you still have to put the $2 million into the committed reserve.
You could change it.
Yeah.
Great.
So you could still do something.
So
let's do
saying?
It in the budget.
Let's
so
do it in the budget.
Okay.
So I got lost. So what fund and budget account are we going to put the monies into?
This new.
It's a new one that he's
creating.
Capital
it's in the
committed
fund?
Reserve.
Yes, yeah,
it's in the general fund, but it's
you're
committed.
It's going to be part of the reserve
committed
balance.
Reserve.
Yeah, and that's where it's going to be. It's going to be, you know, like when I say committed, that's going to take a board resolution to do that. And so this insurance pool is going to be a little different, a little bit of a different idea, but we'll have to make something more generic when we write that up to say that it's going to be in any other funds that as the board see fits or something like that we'll put into that.
Not
right now. We might find out something, devil in the details once we get going on this thing. If it's, like once we put money in, you know, one of the things, concerns I do have is like road and bridge. You can't transfer money into road and bridge because of the distribution to towns.
Yep.
So there's a little flavor there I haven't quite figured out yet. And, you know, whether or not, because as long as you don't use it, if you're going to use it for DHS, we're good to go. But if we decide to put it back into road and bridge, it's a little different flavor. So I guess we just got to stick to our plan for a while with DH&S.
I don't think we're planning to put it on in Road and Bridge.
Yeah.
So does that need to say that the intent for that committed reserve is for capital facilities, or does it need to be...
We wanted to keep it as broad.
Yeah, yeah, we're not saying DHS yet. I didn't,
you know,
say
and then in the capital, like in the back end,
or even your capital.
Could you just say capital expenditure?
Yeah,
capital improvement.
That's what I would recommend. And then I would say that, you know, okay, we could, we always have a little bit of, well, we have flexibility with our, you know, sales tax that we're moving back and forth between the general fund and Road and Bridge, and that could help us out too. I you know. So there's some flavor. I mean, we'll figure it out. And then, like I said, though, I mean, there could be some devils in the detail that here I haven't completely thought about. So,
great.
But right now, I think I can, you know, we can.
I just love having the earmark on it myself.
Yeah.
Sounds I like good. To have my cows tagged and
right.
branded.
Right.
Brand that money in so nobody can steal it. Hey, I didn't even know brand inspectors existed until this year. So you learn something new every day, right? Should we keep going? You got what you need on
yes,
that, Dan?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're going to keep basically move $2 million is what we want to keep in the insurance pool.
Yeah.
Okay, so next is the budget schedule remaining.
Yeah. Okay, so press release and proposed budget published 11/20.
Who do you need to be there?
Whoever wants to be there. Historically, it's just been myself and the press.
Okay.
If you guys want to come, it's whatever you guys want to do.
So that was you and Tom Ross, right?
You and Derek now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should
Ross
probably have somebody
year.
Else there.
Yeah.
I can't be there on the 20th.
November 20th.
Well,
I am available November 20th.
There you go.
Great. Okay, we're fine with the November 20th, 1:30 time, unless Doug really wants to be there.
Okay,
now so I've got an AGNC and an Upper Yampa meeting both that day, so
that will be there.
I am happy to be there. You just tell me what I am supposed to do.
He just goes through the budget,
yeah.
In case Derek has some questions, is what he
great.
From a commissioner perspective.
Yeah, you do have the highlights.
It's an opportunity to do a little bragging, but balancing the budget. Yeah.
Well, someone just tell me about what I'm supposed to brag about, and I'll do it.
Well, I got a list in here that you can kind of. Well, we'll get to that. Okay,
no, that's fine.
So,
okay, so that time is fine. Public hearing.
That's on Tuesday at 5. Tennessee at 5 or 6. 6.
The 26th, Thanksgiving week.
Yeah, usually it's a That's what we typically have done in the past. Historically, we've done that. Not the day before Christmas, but it's.
And do you always do it at 5? You wouldn't do it a little earlier? During our meeting.
Well, the reason why is we like to, the idea was that we get at least some
public
people
hearing.
From the public.
Do people come usually?
Yeah.
Sometimes.
I mean, what do you think about like 4:30? I guess is my question.
Well, last year I don't know. Did we even have?
I don't think we had anybody.
The year before, we had.
Fred always came.
Well, that was a long time ago. But
could we put it at like 4:30 so that it's more in our normal meeting time, and if nobody shows up, we can go home by 5?
Well, the idea was to try to let people get off of work and or at least try to get here. I mean, that was the idea. It's not my choice.
5 is fine, but I'm more fine with 5 at 4:30. Are we? Who is the county manager board? Us.
What's that?
The wording is funny.
Yeah.
We're your board now, Tom.
Oh, okay, man. Oh, I had a type. Yeah, I got carried away there. Sorry about that. Okay, manage board. Yeah, board. Sorry.
No, it's okay. I just thought it was funny.
No, I want to get to it. Just the opposite. Going down to a career years ago, the celebration of the closing of the Oak Creek
Mountain Park. Oh, yeah, that's right.
The Oak Creek
Mountain Park.
4:45?
It's your choice. I'm just giving you the reasons why we did it at 5.
I want to schedule it at 4:30. What do you mean?
4:30 is fine with me.
So 4:30.
I think anybody who's like really excited to be here will be here at 4:30 just as easily as 5.
Yeah.
So we need a recorder. We need a recorder.
Got it.
So if you put that on your schedule, I appreciate that.
So 4:30 November?
November
26th.
Yeah.
Okay, let's keep going.
Now, budget adoption, we got this is kind of a goofy calendar year because.
I'll come on Sunday. No, I'm just joking. I'm not coming on Sunday.
Okay.
Can I get paid 2.5 times for Sunday?
We'll give you 3. You're special. Does that count?
It's holiday for me.
Yeah.
It's budget day.
Triple your normal Sunday rate.
Okay, yeah. Great.
Yeah, you know, there you go. There you go. Yeah, triple your standard rate. Then great. Yes, absolutely. So anyhow, we got this thing going on that we're and we'll find out what happened. But okay, so we got the assessed valuation assessor is due to taxing gains on 12/10. That's by statute.
So I read all this stuff. What day do you think we need to do this?
Well, I'm hoping that if they maybe we put a date in for the 10th, because if we get it by the 1st, we can get it done on the 10th. We may not get it to you, whatever, you know, till the end of like the week of the first, whatever,
and
that
the
be.
The 10th is one of our regular meetings.
Yes,
so we maybe put it on the agenda for the 10th, and if it doesn't work, we need to bump it to the 12th or the 13th.
Yeah, Thursday or Friday.
So this is all the resolutions and the ordinance and the.
It's a mill levy. Yeah, you do the budget levy first, and then you do the mill levy resolution. And
I'm available any of those times, and that's fine with me.
Sister too. So we could, if we get closer, we just might have to schedule something for that Thursday.
How long does it take?
Not long. It's,
like, should we just hold some time on Thursday or Friday just to be safe?
I don't know.
No, there's only 2 resolutions, actually.
Well, aren't we still doing the Hayden?
No, that's paid off. That paid off. That last year was last year. We didn't do it last year.
So we have the mill levy and the adoption of the budget.
Mm-hmm. That's only 2.
Okay.
Yeah.
So should we maybe just hold some time on Friday just to be safe?
Well, that would be, if we wanted to just say as a backup for Friday in case something really go, unless all this goes wrong.
You want to do it on Friday the 13th?
Well, I don't like that. Are you superstitious?
Yeah. Like hold the time and use it for something.
13?
Yeah, definitely. Like a time slush fund.
Yeah, let's keep using that term on tape.
Yeah, it's good. I like it.
Are we on tape?
Yep.
Yeah.
We are.
Okay. Okay, sorry.
You're okay.
So what time? Yeah, what time? At on
Doug,
Friday
what time?
The 13th.
On the Friday the 13th.
Instead of, yeah.
Yeah, nothing at 10:30 or nothing before 10:30.
Put it at 10:30. We'll hold 10:30 just in case we need it on that day.
All right. Okay, that's that idea.
And then we're still keeping open the Tuesday before, right? And
we'll have Deanna put it on the agenda for the 10th, but if you don't get what you need from the assessor's office.
It was a calendar for the 13th, too.
And then I gave you a list of budget highlights to be presented to press. Now, it's just, I don't really need a response right away here, but, I mean, it's just a list of things that, and a little bit of a comment. It starts on page 13 there. And
can
it just
I interrupt for a second? So, you guys are planning to do that on the 10th of November?
No.
December.
Sorry,
okay,
December.
I was gonna
sorry.
Say, that's
thank you.
Actually. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah. It's the 10th of December. Sorry.
Thanks for
So these are the things, you know, if they're...
This is what he's going to talk about.
Yeah, yes. I gotcha. Right. So why don't we have this? Why don't we maybe sometime before then we can circle back to give us some time to look at it and see. I don't know. Is that what...
Yes. I mean...
You don't want to talk through all this right now.
No. I mean, all I was trying to do is get... These are the ideas that we're going to present out there. There's usually typically a highlight. Well, we're going to use Slate, so I don't know exactly what that's what that means for the press release.
They're writing something up.
Yeah, I mean, they would need your information. You know, and then what we think is memorable and worthy of being highlighted. And
we balanced the budget.
Well, I don't. Yeah, it's up to you. I mean,
that's it.
So the typical format. Because I mean, the typical format is to basically, you know, we got a highlight section, and then we've done. Basically, we just make sure we go through all the changes in from our financial statements with the budget. So, like whatever major revenue it is that we show up, and we describe some of those changes, and then we change, you know, basically the changes in personnel, operations, and capital. And then we say like capital, we usually say anything greater than 100,000. Is what we say out there to discuss capital.
So I think we could keep this, and maybe we need to talk about it in broader form. But we already know what the highlights are.
Right.
Number one, we're raising the pay, and we're doing our step increases, and we're doing the
the 2% cost of living. We're adding two patrol deputies, end of the thing, and a few other, I mean, to be in a broader perspective for Slate to be hitting, and we got a balanced budget, and
so we can spend some time.
And we took over the public health department.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think those are probably the main things. And then I think, you know, there's obviously there's a few things we're funding that are not huge dollar items, but are of interest to the public, like the climate action plan, the master plan.
So speaking of the climate action plan, and I have that, I thought, how come we are getting 25 in and spending 65? I thought.
Oh, okay, we're getting funding from, okay, so we're the manager, we're the sponsor, whatever you want
but
to
But I thought the amount we were willing to contribute was 20. That's what I remember.
That's not what's in the budget
it's,
right now.
Okay, it might be wrong.
It's 25, yeah. Is our share.
I don't
25
think
is our share?
Is it 20?
It's budgeted at 65 going out.
That's
and 25 going. And I understand that. 25 coming in and 65 going out. That's so that's 40.
Well, yeah, but then we have like Ski Corps and...
So it's broken out in more than one line item.
Yeah, there's a couple more contributors. Who's Ski Corps put money in and somebody else is putting
money
in?
Well, nobody's committed.
The city?
The city.
Well, that's... Huh?
So I don't know. I know with it, and it's all right with the budget. Yeah. You know, I don't really care. But,
I think we agreed that 20 was our contribution when we had the discussion.
That's kind of what I thought, okay. Too. So
we should just make sure.
It didn't seem like the numbers.
We'll check in with Scott on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thinking it was 25, but...
yeah, 25 is fine too.
Yeah,
okay.
But 20 is
but
what we're discussing.
There's,
if I remember correctly,
what Ski Corps City and us, right? Or in there, is there one more?
He was going to do some fundraising, I think.
Right.
I mean, I think it wasn't decided.
I mean, I can. I don't have.
It's all right. Yet. Dan's taking it out. Dan,
yeah.
You're going to check with Scott to make sure that we all have the same understanding of the county's contribution.
Yeah.
Perfect.
The only budget that I was, I don't know what, like, if you think about it, it was a little bit, this is the board's budget. I mean, there's a lot of internal things going on inside there, and if you guys, if there's something that you want to, you know, if there's, I don't know if there's anything you need to say or not. But
about the board's budget?
Yeah, that was okay. The one I wasn't certain about, because there was a lot of change with the internal, but that's your choice. If how you want to
so we don't have what's left after the changes? The net.
Not on this one. Not on that one. I was thinking that Kendra was... Well, I can get
Kendra
you
Kendra has it.
Yeah, I was thinking Kendra had it, but I think I can still do... We can still run you one if you want. However you want to do that. So you can see what it looks like. How's that?
Yeah. I need to see it again because I was holding off seeing
okay.
It because I don't think we...
She'll be in tomorrow.
She better not be sick more than one day in a row. That's not allowed around here.
She get double 2.5 times for that.
This one comes out of the county for it.
Yeah. So we'll look over that and give you our input on it.
Okay.
That what else you got, Jim?
Let's see, supplemental budgets. Well, I still had this question on Northwest Colorado Health. We've paid them 8 months so far in 2019. And are we stopping at 8 months?
Nobody in this room was aware that we were stopping. So who told you we were stopping? Anybody?
Yeah. Well, so I don't know. We
didn't make a decision.
No one has determined that we're stopping.
I mean,
so whoever told you that was incorrect.
Moffitt stopped.
Yeah. But
okay.
That has nothing to do with us.
So we should still continue on to pay the rest of the two. Okay.
I still have a problem with that. Why are we doing that?
Whoa, wait a minute.
I don't know. What are we doing? Because we haven't discussed this.
Yeah.
We shouldn't decide right now, though. If we're going to stop paying them, we should not decide that in this conversation.
Well,
we should have Harry in here.
But you
and
don't
we
want
should...
him sending a check out to them if you don't want him sending a check out.
We haven't notified them. I think that was where we had landed.
We haven't notified them.
And I'd asked Eric about that, and we never heard back. I never heard back from Eric or whether from you or whoever whether we had notified them that we weren't making that we were canceling the contract.
We had notified them on
the contract.
But I don't think we had talked about the funding in that notice.
Well,
I distinctly remember that when we decided we were going to cancel the contract, Moffitt decided they were not going to pay them for the remainder of the year, and we decided not to go that way. And so if there was a change, it hasn't been. We did not make a change.
That fits with my recollection.
Yeah.
That there was a conversation about
the risks associated with not paying the rest
of
the company.
We just didn't want to screw them over anymore.
And we're starting right now.
So if we're going to stop paying them, we need to have Carrie come in here and we need to talk about it. Yeah. But how many months are we talking about? Two?
Four months.
Four.
Well,
we
paid
them. I thought we paid them on a quarterly basis.
Well, right now it says we got, what I looked up is we paid 8 months.
I think we've been paid monthly. It's
monthly.
It's like 17
and
change. Right.
And when I say we, is it, I'm just, it's
the
not, county. It's not,
yeah.
It's not,
right.
Yeah. I just said it's, somehow it stopped. Let's put it that way.
We didn't actually get clarification from them until they came in to present the budget as to how they split, or they saw the split of that money, and,
yeah.
and they did say that they saw it as 50-50. But we, as far as I...
It's really very helpful information for us.
I don't remember us making the decision to continue paying.
Well, it was sort of a
non-decision.
It was...
Down. We didn't make the decision to stop paying.
Right.
Correct.
Exactly.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess it's just like some of these other budgets and lessons. I guess, hey, we paid you, and you didn't provide services.
I don't know.
No, I understand. If it, when they we get the, we did decide at 75, right?
Yeah.
That's a done deal.
For next year.
For next year.
Yeah.
So I guess it'll soften the blow. By the way, we paid you for the whole year when you didn't provide services for half
the
year.
And it's nobody's fault but theirs that we don't actually know what services we are actually receiving.
Well, it's damn sure not our fault. Our problem.
I know. We don't
careful
know,
about
but,
that.
But we don't know that we're not receiving services. We just only find out what they're continuing to do.
So this is where I saw the 25 and 65. It was out of your sheet that was the budget highlights.
I just
on the revenue was $25,000 for the climate action plan, and then on the expenses
it
was $65,000.
I didn't pick up all the revenues.
So there are other revenues.
Okay, that's fine. Okay,
so
I'm good with that then too.
All right, so supplemental budgets.
So this 200, I got $215,000 projected in 2019. So it's okay, and then you guys are going to tell me at some point, or they're going to. They're going to tell Scott to let loose of the rest of the money for 2019?
I don't know. What do you mean, Scott?
It's called Scott Cowan's budget. So somebody needs to either...
If you guys, if that's what we're deciding, I'm all right with that, too. Let's
What are we deciding?
We're deciding
we're
to
not,
pay them the rest of the
stay four, the course.
Four
We've got
months.
A triple
stay
negative course. Going here, I think.
Stay the course.
We're not working on the side.
They will receive the remainder of their money for 2019. We're not making any change to the amount that they're being paid.
Do you need anything more official than that, Dan?
No. We already got authority in the budget, so it's like we just need to let the money go.
Yeah.
We just need to get where we, yeah, Scott needs to. Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Just keep that in your mind.
I know.
We get beat up.
This is what happens.
Okay.
You don't fully engage with what's going on around you.
Yep.
We didn't.
Okay.
But we are now, my God.
Yeah, we are.
So supplementals, let's see, we got supplemental budgets, monthly favorable, unfavorable report to the board. I didn't know, you know, this is something that it's on, let's see, page
17.
Is 17? Yeah. 17. I don't know if that would be something, you know, this is, we built this out of a cube out of Munis, so it's just a summary presentation. But we could do this like at the end of a month or something like that, and then you guys, I don't know if this helps you.
Yeah,
you know,
I think that would be great. This would be very helpful.
So
it's just a little bit shorter than the one that Helena just developed this last weekend, so you can go into the T drive, and in our budget variances, you can see the one that Helena showed Kendra how to do this last weekend. And that's a lot more.
Whatever detail. It is, I mean, I think
it's a lot
this
more detail.
Big picture was helpful, for sure.
This is a bigger picture.
Yep.
That's a lot more detail, the one that we built.
And we were going to give you, we were giving you a little bit of an explanation why, you know, like any of these high, or the it's a gray area, that'd be the ones that are actually, you know, we've gone over budget already so far. And that would potentially be doing some supplemental budgets. And the other thing I was going to add to that is like, you know, like when you're down to, say, you've got a full 9 months, so you'd be looking at 75% or something like that. That way you could kind of get a feel for whether or not some of these others are going to go over and that kind of things like that, too. So you get that flavor. I was just going to add that. But if you guys feel this is something
And I can either do a link to it or I can just send it to you.
Is it easy?
To do? Yeah, it's just I have to refresh
this
it.
This isn't like taking you a bunch of time to
no,
do
No, once
this.
I hit refresh and it updates it and...
So I just don't want it to be something that I need to be here to
no,
look at.
No, I email it to you.
So, so when it comes through an email, it's not the location, but it's actually going to be this sheet.
Yeah.
No, that sounds great.
Yeah, I can send it over. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. And then the last item here is...
So how did we get to be over on wildfire? Did we not budget any money?
That's personnel. On wildfire. Oh, I'm sorry, wildfire.
That was the personnel. It's a road and bridge.
Yeah, road and bridge and potentially sheriff when they were out on that, whatever that one fire was this year when we moved those people out there.
Under operations we're under.
Yeah.
It's a shelter. Well, that's... Yeah, we don't know that one yet, though. That one we could still go over because, you know, we had all those tankers and stuff like that.
Oh, well, we know.
Drops
the VLAT.
The what?
The VLAT.
Yeah, that. Yeah.
It's a great acronym.
Yeah.
It is a great acronym. Do you know what it stands for, Dan?
No, I've heard the
acronym. Very Large Air Tanker.
VLAT.
It sounds more official when you call it a VLAT.
Sound like
it's
a
very large.
Drive, right?
VE. Very expensive.
Yeah, there you go.
Good point.
In front of the VLAG. Supplemental budgets, we'll basically board approval. We're sitting there thinking of the 24th, but that's the day before Christmas, or that's Christmas Eve. Are we going to be open that day? I mean, sometimes we let people go half a day off, and they use their own time.
I think
2.5 times.
Yeah,
right. It's not a holiday.
It's negative.
Why are we waiting until the 24th?
Well, we do that because we have the week before that we have the budget resolution, and then the 12th, 15th. Well,
you don't want anything to come in after that before the end of the year.
Inevitably, we'll have some more supplementals.
So you asked two different questions. Are we letting people off?
Well, I'm trying to figure out if we're
he
available.
He wants to know if we can be available on the 24th.
Or if we can do it. We can
I'm
do
available
it
every day.
Well, are we?
Sunday's fine.
Sunday, fine. Okay. Well,
as long as we get paid
do,
2.5.
2.5. I think you're it's too
I
low.
Know, I don't know what my Christmas plans are yet, so there's a chance I wouldn't be.
I'll be here, but my kid's daycare is closing early, so I can't stay too late. No, they're closed the 24th.
So if we did it on the 23rd, is that all right?
Or I think we should just plan on the 23rd.
Yeah, I think so, too. Let's just
do it on the
23rd? On Monday, the 23rd.
Okay. Okay. Anything else? That's my end of my list. Anything else?
Do you have anything else for us, Dan?
Well, I got this one. We did pretty good, right?
We did pretty good.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry about the scheduling confusion there.
I'm
pretty happy about Brad holding some money.
We'll see what happens next year.
Yeah. So now you can start designing your
Better have a child care center in it.
Well, you should get your sign committee, huh?
I'm talking about it's going to have a senior citizen center is what it's going to have.
You have both.
So your
place to live in the future, right?
If
you care. We do care.
It was 65, but I'm looking at the numbers, and it adds up to 70. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was budgeted or expected funding at $20,000 for the city.
Oh, that's
15, or sorry, not 20,000 for the county, 15 for the city, 10 from Ski Corps, and then 25,000 from Edola.
I don't really care about any of those numbers except 20. What we are committed to 20. Contributing,
yeah.
Which was 20 for the discussion. So whatever Scott does with all those other
numbers. So 20 is what you guys want from the county.
Yeah. 20 from the county, and then it was the. You know,
how much was the city putting in?
15. And then 10 from the ski area. And
20 is fine.
25 from Dole.
Yeah.
So then we can just hold it over there. When Winnie comes in here and tells us the thing.
Yeah, we're carrying a red on this one.
Just the opposite of the animal shelter.
Right.
It was chintzy.
Well, that's something you want to bring.
Her concept was on the climate.
Yeah, people love that.
Inventory.
Oh, my dog. My dog came from the animal shelter.
office.
My dog was good enough for the animal shelter.